This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Speed dating is an interesting concept, isn't it? Setting an allotted amount of time to get to know as many people as you can. It increases your chances of finding a good match, and there's not a whole lot of room for bullshit. You have to cut to the chase to find what you're looking for. Wouldn't it be nice if you had something like that when it comes to hiring for your business? Well, good news. There's ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter has a new Zip Intro feature that helps speed up the hiring process, connecting you with qualified candidates faster. You can try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/Rogan. As soon as you post your job, Zip Intro will get to work. You could even be talking to candidates in back-to-back calls the very next day. All you have to do is pick a time and it'll start scheduling top talent for you to meet. Enjoy the benefits of speed hiring with the new Zip Intro feature only from ZipRecruiter, rated the number one hiring site based on G2. Try Zip Intro for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Zip Intro, post jobs today. Talk to qualified candidates tomorrow. This episode is brought to you by Visible. Now, you know, I tend to go down a lot of rabbit holes. I want to know everything about everything. And if you're like that, you need wireless that can keep up. Visible is wireless that lets you live in the know. It's the ultimate wireless hack. You get unlimited data and hotspot, so you're connected on the go. Plus, Visible is powered by Verizon's 5G network, meaning fast speeds and great coverage. And with the new Visible Plus Pro plan, you get premium wireless without the premium cost. And the best part, it's all digital, no stores. You can switch to Visible right from your phone. It only takes about 15 minutes, and then you manage your plan in the app. Ready for wireless that lets you live in the know? Make the switch at visible.com/Rogan. Plans start at $25 a month. For the best features, get the new Visible Plus Pro plan for $45 a month. Terms apply. See visible.com for plan features and network management details.
Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
Yes. Good to see you.
You too.
We were just talking about boomers, about parents that won't, they don't want to believe anything other than what they're getting from the news.
It's been a challenge. My dad is an absolute lost cause. My mom is now open to the conversation, and she'll send me a bunch of different articles, and then she'll allow me to disseminate from my perspective. But it's been a rough ride.
Yeah, I've got them on peptides now, which is nice.
Same.
And I've got my stepdad on testosterone replacement, which is nice, and he's seeing benefits of those things. So it's like they're slowly starting to incorporate some of these things. But their whole life, they've been told that the doctor knows everything and that the news is always correct and anything contrary to the news is bullshit.
But arguably, when our parents were our age, it was reliable.
I don't think so.
No?
No, I think it's always been compromised. I just think there was no alternatives.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's what I think.
My mom is a psychoanalyst, PhD. This is a very educated, thoughtful woman. And
sometimes that's the worst.
No. I would argue against in this case. I do appreciate people who see flaws in psychoanalysis, but I've learned a huge amount from my mom in this area. And she also, she majored in journalism before changing careers to psychoanalysis. And so for her to even wrap her head around the fact that journalism can be compromised is almost inconceivable.
Right. I didn't mean psychoanalysis is bad. What I meant is that a lot of times educated people defer to other educated people. Like they're an expert in their field, they assume that all the other experts in their field are also correct. And any heretic is just a fool.
I would happen to agree with that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, you know, we were talking about Fauci on the way in, and both of my parents could arguably canonize the guy, you know, or now I think I've broken through with my mom, but it has taken me since your episode with Brett Weinstein in March of 2020, I have been working on it. We're getting there, though. We're there. Like, we are there. It's been 5 years.
Isn't that crazy that was 5 years ago?
It was like yesterday. I'll never forget it.
5 years ago. And I remember when that episode came out, people were freaking out. Like, what are you doing? What is Brett doing? This is bullshit. You're going to get us all killed.
It made perfect sense to me.
Well, he was right, clearly. And yet still, no apologies, no corrections, except the government website. The COVID-19 website is now up, and this has to be because of Bobby Kennedy.
I mean, the New York Times was like, oh, looks like this came from a lab. It's like, you really?
Well, the best part about it was they're like, we were misled. Yeah, you were misled by you fuckers.
I know.
You did it.
Isn't that?
You did it.
It's disgusting, and there are zero apologies.
No.
Zero course corrections, and they unveil this information as though they are the purveyors of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, we got a headline.
You're
this
a little
came
late.
From a lab.
Like, you're a half a decade late.
That's right.
You know what's really interesting? We've been talking about this a lot lately, that imagine if the roles were reversed and if podcasters were the ones yelling at everybody to go out and take these experimental shots, and then they were experiencing all these complications and all these side effects. Mainstream news would be chastising us. Like, how dare you give people the advice to go out and do that? You're responsible for these people having all these side effects and all these unnecessary deaths and all these people that would have had no problem with COVID. You encouraged them to take this vaccine and they had strokes and they had this and they had that. They'd be calling for us to get shut down.
I actually did that. I did not know any better. And I was pitched a vaccine scientist. And I thought, like, oh, this is great. Yeah, come on the show. I didn't know the vaccine was gene therapy. I had no idea. So I knew it came from a lab. That made perfect sense to me. And I was like, oh, well, this is very clear. It's not, you know, from a wet market. But someone reached out to a producer of mine and said, you know, we've got this person who was a scientist who worked on the vaccine that wants to educate people. And I thought I was doing this major public service. I've had to apologize for that podcast and I've left it up.
What was the scientist?
I cannot remember her name. She was actually young. And the reason I remember that she was in her 30s is because she told me, oh, this tech has been around for 30 years. And I thought, but you're like 35. we've been evolving this technology for 30 years, and you see all of these trials for safety. It's just bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand what it meant to push something through that emergency use loophole at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the difference of, oh, this is a dead pathogen, and this is a live pathogen, and we're worried about adjuvants, but this is gene therapy. I didn't even begin to comprehend what that was, what it meant, or the fact that we would fuck around with something that was experimental. And the scariest part is I had been talking with a woman named Brianne Drezin who was injured during the AstraZeneca COVID-19 trials. And the NIH was studying all of the people that had been injured during the vaccine trials as they rolled out the vaccine with no concerns and lied about every component from it stays in the shoulder, it's out of the body in 24 hours until you find out, no, it's coated in lipid nanoparticles and it can cross the blood-brain barrier. Oops.
Now they're finding out that people can still produce spike protein because of the injections for over 700 days.
And you can shed, supposedly.
Yeah, you give it to your partner.
It's insane.
Crazy. Crazy.
And now they're, I mean, I'm certainly not an expert in mRNA tech, but now we're fast-tracking other vaccines that utilize the same technology. And I know for one, I don't think I'll take an mRNA vaccine ever. It scares the crap out of me.
Well, you've heard Brett Weinstein talk about the flaws in just the technology itself and that, you know, the fact that when it gets into your body, if it gets especially, you know, the thing is nobody aspirated, right? They didn't inject people and pull back to make sure they're not on a blood vessel. They just plunged it, including when they did it live with Biden on television,
which
I don't think that was a vaccine. I said to this day, people are like, yo, what, you conspiracy theorist? Yeah, I'm telling you right now, I think it's a conspiracy. I don't think they would take a chance in injecting a fucking 80-year-old man when you know that you have to, like, stay there at the clinic for 20 minutes in case you drop dead.
Someone.
Yeah.
You know, my wife's friend, her friend's son actually, had the COVID vaccine and the flu vaccine on the same day.
Oy.
He did supposedly stay for 15 minutes, got in the car, must have passed out or had a seizure, hit a tree and died. had a crazy reaction to it. I know I'm not trying to promote, you know, this anti-vax position, but
that's not a vaccine. You know, exactly. Calling it a vaccine is fucking crazy.
That's exactly it.
It was a totally experimental gene therapy. And what Brett was saying about it is, if you don't aspirate, you're shooting it right into a blood vessel. If you're shooting it right into a blood vessel, it could go to all sorts of areas of the body where the body's going to attack it like it's a disease, particularly the heart. And it's like, this is why you get myocarditis, because the heart doesn't heal, which is why you don't get heart cancer. Your heart just scars over. So people have these inflamed, enlarged hearts and then diminished cardiovascular function. And he was talking about this way earlier than anybody else. And there were blood on his hands. He's killing grandmas. And the vaccine saved millions of lives. People say that all the time. They've saved millions of lives. Like, how? If people still got COVID, not only that, they got more COVID than people that didn't get vaccinated.
I am still having this exact debate, actually, with my mom, who's like, but honey, it saved millions. And you know what's crazy? Have you actually tried to Google that information? Because you can make a case for that based on what will come up on Google. And she's like, but look right here, it says it saved millions of lives.
But you know, it's only based on the idea that those people would have died if they didn't have COVID.
Right.
And the problem is, you're going to get COVID anyway. So that data is bullshit. Not only that, even when people got COVID, 99.07 of those fuckers lived.
I just pulled that up.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to illustrate that point. I was like, do you realize that I think the percentage of mortality with this is like 1%? And when you look at it,
it's like considerably less.
0.03 all the way up till you hit about 80 years old.
Right.
and then it's like, well, 1% or so, 1.5 maybe in 80-year-olds or morbidly obese or severely autoimmune, you know, immunocompromised.
Is, when you have 330 million people in this country, and then, you know, you look at that 0.3%, that starts looking like a lot of people. But those are just people that are on death's door. That's the reality. Metabolically unhealthy, obese, diabetes, all sorts of problems, cancer, leukemia, on chemotherapy. Those are the people that died.
I remember when Bill Maher was talking about how it was people who, there was a study that came out of the CDC, and forgive me because I don't remember the exact percentage, but it was upwards of 80% of the people who died or had severe cases of COVID were obese or overweight. And this is when, you know, you could be healthy at any size. That PSYOP was in full effect.
That must have drove you crazy.
Oh, I was completely unraveling. People ask me, like, what happened? You were a good liberal.
You're still a good liberal.
I'm a good liberal.
If you go back to the old definition.
I haven't changed.
Yeah, nor
I go
have I.
issue by issue with my friends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you show me where I've shifted my position on any issue outside of Trump. I used to think he was Hitlerian and he was going to round up all the gays and we were all fucked. None of that happened. I thought Russia, Russia, Russia. I thought that was real. So as new evidence came to light and I managed to survive his first term intact along with, you know, my gay relationships, I somehow started to feel that maybe a lot of that was bullshit propaganda. But outside of that, not one of my positions has changed. Not one. And I find that arguably the right is more welcoming and more tolerant now. I can sit down and have a conversation with Matt Walsh and debate gay marriage in a civil fashion. And I ended up, again, like I bring up Bill because I work with Bill in some capacity on his podcast network. And I was having to defend him on Piers Morgan because he was sitting down with Trump and they called him a bigot and a racist and anti-science because he was going to sit with Trump. I'm like, well, where's the outrage that he sits down with Newsom? I hate that guy way more. And I don't
Piers Morgan was saying this, or
not
the guests?
Piers.
Yeah,
not
the Piers. Guests.
Piers was awesome. The guests.
Piers' show is Maury Povich 2.0. It's a better version of Maury Povich.
I kind of love it, though. And I love when I get to do it because you're allowed to act unhinged. You still have to make your points.
Yeah.
But it is a bit, it is theatrical. But sometimes I think when you are able to be so theatrical, it goes viral, and the point that you're trying to make is arguably seen by more, unless it's a platform, of course, like yours. But
Yeah, he does a good job of that. I just don't think it's a good way to discuss ideas.
You're not wrong.
But it's really good as far as like going viral. It's great.
You're not wrong about that. Yeah, I still find it fun though. Because what you hold in for all those civil conversations where you're biting your tongue, you're trying to communicate calmly, articulately. Here you can just unleash that your hypocrisy is disgusting. Everything I swallow in every conversation with all my friends from California, and you can just let it rip and freaking tear into people because they started it.
Yeah,
they started the fight.
I don't like that. I don't like doing that. So I'm not interested in that.
I get it.
I'm not interested in that kind of conflict. I don't want to talk to people like that. I don't like it.
I understand. You are like a very gentle soul. I watch you sometimes and you're so, not sometimes, I watch you often and you're a very gentle soul. And sometimes I think, God, toxic masculinity, like you're so, like, that whole notion, all of the men in your space tend to be far kinder and softer, and it's the women that are savages. I mean, I happen to love, I love Megyn Kelly. I think she's brilliant, but goddamn, I never want to be on the wrong side of her.
Yeah, she's ruthless.
She'll rip your head off and like eat your heart. That, do not fuck with that woman.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, I think that some of the women in the space are genuinely more aggressive than the men.
Well, do you think that's because they have to get respect? Like, why do you think that is?
No, I don't think so. And I find that it's more respectable when you speak in the fashion that you do. And I've tried to really curtail that behavior throughout every other aspect of my life, personally and professionally, whether I'm fighting with a contractor on my house. I try to lower the octaves of my voice, or I'm trying to win somebody over in a debate. But I think, I think because it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And it's a competitive space.
Yeah.
I really think that's it. And it seems to work. So.
Sort of. But why am I number one then? Because I don't do it. Because that's like the counter argument.
Fair.
To that.
Here would be my answer. Because you can lick everything in the fridge. And what I mean by that is you don't have a niche.
Lick everything in the fridge.
Seriously. I'm not kidding.
I've never heard that expression
before. You can talk
about
anything and everything, and it's fascinating, and people tune in for it. They don't come here because they want to hear about politics, or they want to hear about health, or they want to hear about fucking aliens. They come here because they want to hear about all of it, and they want to hear what you think about all of it. So it's not really interesting when someone else does it, because they're not there to see what that individual thinks about the subject matter. So when I turn into Megyn Kelly, it's like, or tune in, it's because I want...
Don't turn into her.
No, I'm not. The fuck no, dude. I'm messing with her. She's a lovely person, and she's been nothing but lovely with me, but I...
I'm sure.
As mentioned, I'm not interested in being on her bad side. However, when I tune in, it's not because I want to see her reaction or her opinion on something. It's because I want to learn what is the counter argument to deporting this guy, Kilmar Obrego Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, steel man that argument for me, and then tune into something else and try to disseminate what the truth is. And she's, I think, a constitutional attorney. So I feel like I'm getting great information. With you, you're not just learning about something, but you're also curious what you think about it. If you're going to go, bullshit, or if you do the, wow, you know, you want to see what you think about it.
Mm. Yeah, I just think we could all do with a little less yelling at each other.
You're totally right.
I just don't think it's good for anybody. So every time I've engaged in it, I feel bad for the rest of the day.
Really?
Even if I win, I don't feel good. I just feel like, ugh, I don't like that.
What if they deserved it?
I think you should be nice until it's time to not be nice, and generally that's like extreme violence. That's my feeling, you know, like
extreme
be nice up until you're literally trying to incapacitate a person.
That's fair. I feel like
I don't think we have to do that. And I think the only time you have to do that is when someone's completely psychotic.
Yeah.
99.999% of the time, you're better off serving you and that person better by just being nice
and calm and making a point in an intelligent fashion. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, not being married to your ideas either. also, you know, not like taking an opposition to your ideas as an opposition to you as a being. You know, these are just ideas. Like, if someone thinks that you're incorrect, if someone thinks I'm incorrect, I'm like, well, tell me why. What do you think? Why do you think that? Where'd you come to this conclusion? What was the tipping point for you? Like, what is it? Like, tell me what it is.
That's rare, though. I was just actually talking to Mike Rowe about that. Why do we hold on so fastidiously to our dogma? And it honestly, because it doesn't feel right to have somebody say, I told you so. I will do the mea culpa, and I have a million times. But it is certainly more rare. I mean, how often do you see a walk back or a course correct? Not often. And I know that, you know, when people wag their finger at me, are you happy? This is what you voted for. You want to defend things that arguably you may agree with them on.
Right.
And I'm like, don't do it. Just do you see their point? If so, acknowledge you see their point. And then I still feel the need to play the lesser evil game, even when they're right. They're still wrong, because when I weigh out, you know, the choices I had, even though you're right on this issue, you know, I'm right about my choice ultimately, because more things went the way I wanted them to than the way I didn't. It takes a lot of ego strength to admit where you're wrong. And I just don't think a lot of people have that. And there is a tribalism with everything, whether it's workout trends, diets, for God's sake. I mean, we've seen this kind of dogma in health and wellness for years. It's no fun to say you were wrong. And in some cases, it can have professional repercussions for people.
Sure. Did you experience any professional repercussions when you're pushing back against this healthy at any size stuff? Because that's
how much time do you have on that one?
Well, let's go in it, because that to me was so fascinating.
Get
that
comfortable.
The concept of fat shaming, which, like, I don't think you should hurt anybody's feelings, but I think at a certain point in time, sometimes hurting someone's feelings causes actions, and hurting someone's feelings with the truth. And you can give the truth to someone lovingly. You know, you could say, look, I care about you. This is why I want to tell you you're a fat fuck. Like, you really are. You're disgusting, and you need to lose weight, and you're fully addicted to food, and you don't understand what it's doing to your body, and you're being lied to by all these other people, like these fat doctors. Like, there's some lady in the UK who calls herself the fat doctor. I'm like,
great
lady, you're just overwhelmed with inflammation. I could just see it looking at you. This is crazy that you're giving this advice out when you can't walk up a hill. There's no way. Like, you're so unhealthy.
Yeah.
And this idea that shaming people is worse than telling them the truth, that's going to make them feel bad, maybe temporarily, but you could do it with kindness. And then that person can make choices that will be, and then you encourage them, like, I'm so glad you changed your diet. I'm so glad you cut out this and cut out that, and now you're doing well, and you've decided to walk 10,000 steps a day, and you've decided to start exercising a little bit, you know? This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. This Mother's Day, why give mom only flowers when you can give her flowers plus a real break? For a limited time, use code JOE50 to get 50% off up to $15 value when you spend $15 or more on local florists, convenience, grocery, and retail stores on DoorDash. And starting May 9th, Mother's Day weekend, your flower order will unlock credit towards select gifts that'll take cooking, planning, and more off mom's plate. Make Mother's Day special with DoorDash. Terms apply.
You've given me a lot to tackle here. So let's start with
the professional stuff.
The PSYOP component of healthy in any size. This is a big food narrative. This has been proven. Even the friggin'...
Explain big food narrative, what you mean by that.
Okay. So big food, put simply, hired a bunch of registered dietitians to co-opt this concept of intuitive eating. And I'm dead ass serious with hashtags like derail the shame, and they paid them and they put out all of these posts and went to all of these conventions and promoted the narrative that you can be healthy at any size. And it's just a flat out lie. It is a flat earther conversation. It is pseudoscience at its best. There's no truth behind that. There is a robust amount of data that show us being obese is associated with like 170 comorbidities. This is a non-factor. It's been debunked. We know this for a fact. So when that happens, what they're doing is essentially placating someone who already feels, now I can attack what's going on, or address rather, what's going on with an individual who is that size, and it is largely psychological. Once you are past the point of dad bod, you know what I mean? Like, I work three jobs, life beat me down, it's a food desert, and I'm 40 pounds overweight, and I've let myself go. This is a different animal. When you're dealing with somebody who is 50 plus pounds overweight, there is a psychological component. So the first thing we need to do is make them aware that there is a problem, without question. But you can do it without shame, giving them facts of, listen, this is unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And because you are such a valuable individual, I want you to understand this, because only from a place of feeling truly worthy are you able to facilitate a change. You don't work out because you hate your body. You work out because you love it. So it doesn't need to be a shaming. There's no shame there, to be honest, Joe. I know that people claim there is, because you pointed out this vulnerability or this flaw in the person, but we all have flaws and vulnerabilities. People who are overweight simply wear them, so it's easier to judge, right?
Yeah.
So by educating them first, and then without question, I like to give people, or when I was able to do the work hands-on, that rock bottom moment, because they are overweight because it is providing them with something extraordinarily significant. And I can give you examples should you need them, but I promise you that at one time or another, people turn to addictions, in this case food, because it means their psychological survival. So put simply, the most obvious example would be a person who was incested, molested, raped, puts on weight to desexualize. That's just one example of many, but it's easy to illustrate the point. So whatever this thing is providing them is the part that's so hard to let go of.
Yeah.
Because unconsciously it's terrifying. And you got to first show them, this is why we need to change. And then you got to give them that path towards change, and you got to make it harder. You got to make them feel the pain. It could be physically, it could be psychologically, but it doesn't have to be shameful, of the way they've been living, so that the work and the sacrifice associated with change is less painful than continuing the negative and destructive habits.
Mm.
You don't have to shame them. I know what the message seems like it is, but it really isn't.
Well, the whole term fat shaming is pretty recent, right?
Yes, very. Let's get right back to you asked me what I lost.
Intuitive eating is a fascinating phrase. And the idea that this is by the same people that used to be in charge of tobacco. This is what's really crazy. These are the R.J. Reynolds and these tobacco companies bought all these fast food, processed food companies, and they use the same tactics that they use with that to push terrible foods on people.
Well, they literally have a team of multidisciplinary scientists that work around the clock to figure out how to get people to not eat just one, and then put it in a commercial. It's like literally in broad daylight. Yeah. Look what we're doing to people.
Bet you can't eat just one.
Yeah. You know, but what they're doing is they are exploiting somebody's psychology, and they're hijacking their biology with this food, mm-hmm. without question. And this is why you have seen rates of obesity skyrocket from the 70s, when it was like 5% of the adult population was overweight or obese, to 74%. We're all, is it quantum leap in genetics? That's a big pharma psyop of like, no, this is all genetic. You're genetically obese. Well, yeah. Where was it? What happened? I've never seen such a quantum leap in genetics. How come we were genetically obese in the 70s? Like, what was that tipping point, if you will, that created the cascade of obesity over the last five decades? Of course, it's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's ingredients in food. It's really simple.
At that, and also how they engineer the environment, and you're surrounded by it. You can't escape it. Remember the days when you weren't allowed to have food at a bookstore? And now every friggin' bookstore has a cafe.
Starbucks.
Yeah, with a 600 calorie drink. You are surrounded. There is nowhere you can go right now where food is not omnipresent, in particular this crappy food. And they generally do it through government contracts and subsidies. So it's at your schools, your hospitals, like anywhere you go, you will find this garbage food. So even if you have that moment of willpower, which is arguably this fleeting moment of bravado, if you're constantly surrounded by it, you will give in. Managing your environment is a large part of helping someone be successful. It's a band-aid, right? If you're dealing with sexual abuse, for example, but controlling the environment is definitely a component in helping them. You can't control the environment.
Right.
You can't control the narrative. You can't control what's in the food. And it's all by design. It's not just the crap in the food. It's how they control the narrative around it and how they engineer the environment and how they systematically shut down the people that point it out as fat shamers, for example, or racists.
Yeah.
It's another big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. Or transphobes or fill in the blank. But it's fascinating to me that hospitals fall into this. A friend of mine was visiting his friend who has prostate cancer. And this guy is in the hospital being treated for cancer. And then he went to look at what they're feeding him in the hospital. And they're feeding him applesauce, which is just loaded with high fructose corn syrup, apple juice or orange juice, which is not even juice. It's concentrate. It's all bullshit.
Yep.
And then some kind of a fucking sandwich, which is made out of this processed wheat bread.
Yeah.
It's
stable. It probably has in that meal alone 100 plus chemicals. I think I'm being conservative.
Yeah. At a hospital.
It has to do with government contracts.
Yeah, but it's so crazy that hospitals, their diets in hospitals are co-opted.
I can't even, my kids, who I know will be watching this, so I love you guys, it's okay. But they stopped packing their lunches. And I was like, guys, why are we not packing our lunches anymore? And I would watch all the crap that I would buy go bad in the pantry. And my son ratted my daughter out. And he's like, she's eating breakfast at school. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, the sugar cereal, Lou's having that at school. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? My kids who know better, it's.
But isn't that a rebellion against mom, though? Which kids definitely do. Like, my youngest daughter, she jokes around about, she's like, ooh, seed oils. I love seed oils. She'll have salad dressing with seed oil, and she, like, mocks me. I'm like, okay, you eat whatever you want, but just know what it is.
I honestly think the kids know what it is. And I try to give them enough freedom now at these ages, you know, 13 and 15, to make some of their own decisions. So not everything is a pushback. But I truly think there is an addictive component.
Oh, for sure.
And she just, it's like, I'm so good at home. And I don't mean to associate, not good, but I eat well at home. Let's put it that way. And, you know, just at school. I'm just going to do this at school. And the problem, obviously, is when she goes off to college, I won't be able to control the environment at home. And I'm like, honey, okay, hold on. There's a like 20-year-old influencer named Bad Baby, I think. Joe, she saw this. Okay, she saw this girl.
That's the lady from Dr. Phil.
Yes!
Catch Me Outside.
Catch Me Outside. So she saw this girl when she was like 9 and has followed Bad Baby. Bad Baby now has cancer.
What?
I believe so.
For real?
According to my daughter, exactly the point, though. That's exactly the point. And so now I can say to my kids, this isn't just mom's generation, which how come there's something else to look at? My mom is 76. None of the public figures in her generation got cancer. You didn't see Susan Sarandon or Sigourney Weaver or Meryl Streep. None of them got cancer. But in my generation, it's like Maria Menounos, Christina Applegate, something's going on with Angelina Jolie, Kate Middleton. In my generation, the canary is dead in the coal mine. It's not even a question of the negative impact. If we're not looking at statistics, if we're just looking from an observational perspective, it's in the news every single day someone's dealing with cancer. Olivia Munn. Now you're seeing 20-year-olds deal with this. And I was able to point to that to my daughter and say, this is the shit that I am talking about. She's 5 years older than you.
What does that lady have? Does it say?
Yeah, she's claimed that she's got a form of leukemia, I believe. But people,
they debate, like, doubt her.
For sure they doubt her.
I don't know. She's a little bit kooky, right?
Sure.
You still can't point to the fact. Even if it's not Bad Baby, who may be lying, I'm not sure.
I like
sure.
how you're using that name, Bad Baby.
Is it Bad Baby? I said Bad Bunny the other day, and my kids are like, no, that's the rapper.
She says she insisted she'd been cleared for surgery, and she has no regrets about her cosmetic tweaks. What does a cosmetic tweak have to do with leukemia?
I don't know.
I think people are
They're not going to perform plastic surgery on a cancer patient. What? She's getting plastic surgery? Is it, what is this article about?
Go scroll out. Look at the chronic myeloid leukemia piece, because that's the part I know about.
She breaks silence on claims she lied about having cancer after being slammed for vaping.
Oh God, did she lie about it?
That's, I was just showing you.
Go back up.
I don't know.
Because I thought she had like a wig. My daughter said she lost her hair.
21 says currently battling chronic, how do you say that? Myeloid leukemia.
Yeah.
Criticized for getting cosmetic surgery while battling disease, which is pretty crazy. Is that really true?
That's the part that
she underwent plastic surgery and challenged rival Alabama Barker to a physical fight.
See, that's
all
right.
While battling leukemia.
Apparently, Alabama Barker did not show up for that fight because my daughter was very disappointed
They were going to meet somewhere and actually
meet,
fight?
I think, in Calabasas and throw down.
Oh boy, the Calabasas throwdown.
That's
the classic.
Of course.
It used to be an Old West shootout. Now it's, now it's a Calabasas throwdown.
Sure, there's hair pulling and all kinds of stuff.
But
I can tell you with certainty. Is that the rate of early onset cancer diagnosis in people 18 to 49 has gone up 79% over the past two decades. So if in fact Bad Baby is being untruthful and deceitful, those statistics are real.
Yes, those statistics are real, and including the big leap since the COVID vaccine was rolled out.
You know, I don't have any information on that.
There was a doctor that was on the Tucker Carlson show the other day that's saying he's seeing pancreatic cancer in kids for the first time ever in his career. Said, my entire career, I never saw pancreatic cancer in children.
Okay. I want to play devil's advocate to
Please
that argument do. And simply say the statistic that I just cited, I believe, came out in 2019. So this is pre-COVID.
Oh, facts. I'm not doubting that diet and environmental factors. I think there's a host of different things going on.
I agree.
For sure, there's pesticides and herbicides. That's a major factor. You know, when you look at the fact that 90%+ of people have Roundup in their blood, that's crazy.
You know, that stuff is linked to chemical warfare from Vietnam. It has a historical connection to Agent Orange.
Really?
Yeah. Google it. Jamie, check that. But yeah, because I wrote about it in a book.
Ugh.
I know. That should alarm you.
Glyphosate is everywhere. It's so spooky. This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. We've talked about digital threats and protecting your personal information on the show before, but it's just as important that you take care of yourself and your loved ones in the real world too, and that's where SimpliSafe comes in for your home security system. They use a mix of AI technology and real live breathing people to keep you safe. Like if some weirdo is loitering around your property, AI-powered cameras can help detect it, and agents can act quickly to deter them or contact the police. But SimpliSafe is there for more than just the bad stuff. Their cameras also capture the moments you might want to save, like the first time your daughter rides her bike down the driveway or your kid is opening their acceptance letter from college on the front porch. Keep your family safe so you can experience moments like that more often. Try out SimpliSafe. They've got a 60-day satisfaction guarantee or your money back. Plus, you can get 50% off your new SimpliSafe system with professional monitoring and your first month free. Just go to simplisafe.com/Rogan. That's simplisafe.com/Rogan for 50% off and your first month free. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. And other countries won't even allow its use.
Nope.
And we spray it on everything. Not only that, we have like corn that's genetically engineered to be immune to glyphosate so they could just spray the shit out of it. And then you eat that corn and you're getting glyphosate residue. You're just getting it. And it's in your blood.
It's in everything.
It's in everything. It's in rice.
It's in the water.
It's in wheat. Yeah.
It's in especially.
It's in the runoff. So it gets in the fish. You know, most freshwater fish have toxic levels of lead and or heavy metals in them. Like most freshwater fish, you really probably shouldn't be eating.
I knew big predatory fish.
Yes, that's in the ocean. But that's heavy metals from the ocean, which is also from us. But that's mercury. But there's toxic levels of heavy metals and pollutants and, you know, forever chemicals that are in freshwater fish. Because all that shit that's in the ground gets into lakes.
Right.
All that shit that, you know, all the runoff, all that stuff gets into streams, gets into creeks, gets into rivers. You know, we watched a video when we had Will Harris from White Oak Pastures on the podcast. And he showed the difference between his regenerative farm that doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides and his neighbor's farm. And there's literally a dividing line in the river where you can see the runoff from his neighbor's farm turns the entire river brown. And it's legal. It's legal to pollute
Of course.
Because it's industrial farming.
Exactly.
That's... But it's crazy. It's just like all that industrial fertilizer, herbicides, and pesticides are running off because the topsoil's dead. So all that stuff is running off as soon as it rains, and it runs right into the river, and you can see a dividing line. There's like clear water on one side and this disgusting brown, dirty water on the right side.
Have you seen where it runs from the river into the ocean
mm-hmm.
and creates dead zones
oh,
that
yeah.
you can see from space?
No oxygen.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing but jellyfish
well, I
for
have
miles.
A friend of mine who was a yoga instructor, and he's from Argentina. And he came to America, and no one told him. He was in L.A. No one told him, don't surf after it rains. So he was surfing, and he didn't understand that all the runoff from all the streets goes into the ocean. He got horribly sick.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was bedridden, and he was like, what the fuck is going on with the ocean?
Yeah, having grown up in California and spending a lot of time in the water, I have known this for years, and now I can't even imagine, by the way, in California, who would dare to get in the ocean at this point.
Yeah.
Considering all of the crap from the fires. That's a great irony.
Oh, yeah.
That's my favorite. Oh, we're not doing any forestry mitigation because of the environment. And yet these fires have rolled back all of those protections by something like 20 years.
Yeah.
Is it just...
Well, that ground's ruined forever.
Destroyed. And then pours into the ocean.
Twice the size of Manhattan, ruined ground. All those people that had electric cars... Those batteries, all that shit is all the plastics and the fiberglass and carbon fiber, all that stuff, the tires, all that stuff is now in the soil. And you're going to, good luck having a garden. Good luck. You want to try to grow plants? Good luck.
I was talking to, I don't know if you've ever seen this gentleman. He's really great. He wrote a book called Eat to Beat Disease named Dr. William Lee. And he called me after the fire because I was out there visiting my mom. He's like, where are you? Are you in California? And I was like, I am at the moment. In fact, I'm right here by Palisades. And he said, Jill, do you remember 9/11 dust? That whole thing with all that? I was like, of course I remember. Send me a bunch of articles. And he's like, you got to get out of there. Get your mom out of there. He's like, it gets in your kids' clothes when they're on their way to school. He goes, we're going to be talking about this 10 years from now, the result of the toxins in this fire and how they've affected people's health.
No doubt. No doubt.
Crazy. And it happens twice a year.
Yeah.
At least.
Oh, I was evacuated 3 times when I lived in L.A.
In fact, I lost 2 homes, one that I owned in 2018 and one that I sold in 21 just actually burned.
Ugh.
It's nuts.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And nothing. I mean, what they did during the fire was just so insane. The fact that the reservoir was empty. Oh, we need to make a lid for it. We didn't get around to it.
For over a year, and it hadn't even begun.
No.
There were so many things wrong there that I could literally...
What's lack of funding, Jillian? They don't have enough money.
I can't. Have you seen Mike Schellenberger talk about this?
Yes.
That will make your blood boil.
Yeah. No, Schellenberger's great.
I love him. He's like... We knew about this for 7 days with the winds, and we could have, we could have borrowed firefighters from all the different states and this and that, and had them pre-positioned.
Karen Bass went to Ghana for a birthday party.
Oh my
party.
God! knowing between Mike Schellenberger and Corolla, whipping me into a frenzy about this, I literally think I've like popped 10 blood vessels because so much of this could have been mitigated and wasn't. And in fact, Gavin Newsom, my favorite politician.
He's my favorite podcaster. I wish we'd get back to it. He stopped. I don't know why he stopped.
Oh, did he stop? I didn't know that.
The fucking show was horrible.
Oh, God.
Everybody was mocking him. It was so bad for him. He had this idea of reaching across the aisle. So he reached across the aisle, and he gets guys like Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon on, and then they eat his lunch. And so, and people I think in his party were like, what the fuck are you doing? You're making us look horrible. So he bails on his podcast. When was his last episode?
I didn't realize he bailed.
Oh, he's back.
We weren't going to get that lucky. I don't think so.
Oh, Rahm Emanuel. Okay, now he's with his own side.
Yeah.
Scott Galloway, pretty much his own side.
Yeah.
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 Anthony Scaramucci, he hates Trump. That's a good move.
Yep.
Ezra Klein. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's gone away. It's just that it's so horrible nobody's watching it. And no one is even talking about it anymore.
Yeah, that might be
This is Gavin Newsom.
Oh, my God. God.
But it was so funny because that was the response after the election. They said, well, podcasts influenced the election, so we'll start our own podcast. Your podcast is going to make people even more inclined to not vote for you.
My favorite was, we need our own version of Joe Rogan. And I love when you, I remember when you loved Bernie. You were like, I like the guy. You had Joe Rogan. Joe was on your side. And that's the one thing with the left is they purge people from the party.
Because it's a cult. It really is. Like leftism, not being an actual progressive. Like an actual progressive is a person who's kind, who wants people to just exist and be yourself and live amongst us. And we should all have social safety net and laws that like are kind and compassionate. We should look at the fact that we are an incredible first world nation, and we should like roll out the red carpet to all the people that live here and try to make it a better place for everybody. Like, that's real progressivism. And then it morphed into this like, let perverts get into the women's room. Let men compete in women's sports. Like, and ignore the fact that some people are fucking psychotic and give them a blank check as long as they just say they're a woman. Like, oh, you're a woman. Go ahead. Carte blanche. Get in. And not only that, but treat them better than you treat women themselves, because they're actually more oppressed than women.
Isn't that the
oppression hierarchy.
Right.
So they get the gold medal in the oppression Olympics. It's bananas.
It is bananas. It really is. I can't. That's the stuff where you look and you say, I was never for any of this.
Yeah.
I'm a libertarian. I'm for personal freedoms, of course. If you want to change your gender as an adult, that's absolutely up to you. And I would fight for your right to do that and live with dignity. But when your personal choices impact the rights and the freedoms of others, this is a far more nuanced conversation.
Far more.
And it's like, whoa!
Especially when you're dealing with kids.
And oh, that's a whole different
thing. This is where it gets really crazy.
No, that's evil.
There's this hilarious conversation between this woman who's like, she looks like she's probably in her 70s. And this person's asking her, if you had a granddaughter, would you support them taking puberty blockers? She's like, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's insane to try to force a girl to go through puberty if she's really a boy and this and that. Would you allow them to get a tattoo? Oh, I think that's permanent. No irony. Seconds later, no recognition of what she's saying. No, like tattoos can be removed, lady.
I know.
Yeah, they laser those off.
Have you noticed, though? They really don't understand it.
No.
And I got in a conversation with Jessica Tarlov about this, and she's like, oh, but, you know, the kids go through extensive therapy. I'm like, that's not true, Jessica. Or the concept that it's reversible. People believe
that's not true.
This. Exactly.
Yeah, not only is it not true, but puberty blockers are the exact same thing they give to sex criminals. When you have a sexual molester that is forced to be on sterilization drugs, that's exactly what they give to young boys.
It sterilizes kids.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Takes away sexual function. If you interrupt puberty in the stage 10 or 2. And the reason I bring this up is because they'll tell you it's reversible.
No.
But here's the thing. Someone, I actually went through this exercise with somebody and I was like, show that to me. And they went on ChatGPT and it's like, yes, this is reversible. And the argument is that should you have a child that starts puberty at 7 and you use puberty blockers, it's very rare. It can happen. And they do it strategically to slow that down for a child and help them develop at a normal pace. It doesn't sterilize them or make them incapable of having an orgasm. So the distinction that's key is when you block puberty at the stage of 10 or 2, which is arguably the appropriate age that puberty is meant to begin, then you've got sterilization, you've got an inability to ever have an orgasm, it affects bone development, it affects brain development.
Give them strokes.
It's terrible for them.
Yeah.
They're friggin' children. Their body is not developed properly. Nobody understands that. They don't. When they make that argument, they're told the parting line of, if you make them go through this, they'll kill themselves. And it turns out that the data doesn't bear out to prove that either. But they
not only that, it goes the other way. The data goes the other way.
They're
25% more likely to commit suicide, suicidal ideation, depression, anxiety. All those things ramp up once they've transitioned. because they realize like they've made a horrible mistake and they've been influenced by these crazy people that want to use them as like virtue flags. They want to use children as virtue flags. It's fucking insane. They also shouldn't be allowed to call them a different thing than when they call them. They call them chemical castration drugs for sex offenders, but yet they call them puberty blockers.
And gender-affirming care.
Gender-affirming care.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, it's fucking barbaric and bananas. Is. And we're going to look back at it the same way we looked at lobotomies. You know, we performed lobotomies for, I think, roughly around 50 or 60 years for, I think they stopped it in 1967. I think that's when they stopped the last lobotomies. And then they realized, like, oh my God, this is a terrible thing to do. But they did it for so fucking long. And this is the same thing that's going to happen with this whole gender-affirming care thing for minors. It's crazy. Kids don't know what's going on. You have children. You know what it's like.
Oh, yeah.
They go through phases and cycles. They become tomboys, and boys play with dolls. Like, who cares? By the way, a lot of those boys that want to transition, it turns out they're just gay. And if you just leave them and let them be gay, and a lot of my gay friends fucking hate it because they're like, you're trying to erase gay people. You're trying to say that all these gay people are really in the wrong gender.
Gosh, I've never thought of it from that angle. I have seen the financial component, though.
Oh, that's
it's
a big problem.
It's a multi-billion dollar business.
That's where it's evil.
And when you look at who's funding this stuff, I remember, my God, I used to go to the friggin' Human Rights Campaign dinners and donate, you know, when you're fighting for gay marriage and I'm a good liberal. And now when you go to their page, if they've got a score, and forgive me, I can't remember the friggin' name of it, but there's a score where they rate different medical institutions on how they provide gender-affirming care. And if they get a bad score, it impacts, I think, how much grant money they can get. Mm-hmm. There's a page for this. I believe it's through the HRC on their website. And when you look at who funds it, like, Pfizer. Like, oh, that's not at all surprising. One drug, I think Lupron, is almost $1 billion a year business.
Boy.
Off-label. I forgive me, it's been a minute since I've looked into this, but I'm in the zone for sure.
Oy.
Yeah, terrifying stuff.
Well, it's just the money thing is so scary because when money gets attached to anything, all ethics and morals go out the window and they just try to make as much money from these things as is humanly possible. And they've always done that.
Yep,
they've always done that across the board with virtually everything. And we're surprised when it happens with children.
I don't know. You and I are surprised. But I think most people are not awake at all about it.
No, most people aren't awake at all. And if it doesn't affect them personally, they feel like it's important to espouse these beliefs because these beliefs show that you're a good progressive.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, it's like people's minds have been co-opted by... You know, I don't necessarily believe in demons and angels. I don't believe that. But if you were the devil, like, wouldn't money be your most valuable tool to get people to do absolutely atrocious, evil things that are going to ruin their lives? Money is like the devil's playground. It's like where the devil can convince good people to do things. And then you use words like gender-affirming care. And, you know, you can kind of, like, change the narrative. But the end result is really just you're profiting off of people's confusion. And you're doing so in a way where you're sacrificing. It's literal child sacrifice. Those children that wind up committing suicide because they went through this gender-affirming care and are horribly depressed and they don't have breasts anymore and they're so confused and they can't have children anymore. And they just wind up killing themselves, and this is sacrifice. This is like a form of child sacrifice for financial gain. I mean, you're not sacrificing them to the gods or to demons. You're doing it to money. And it's really wild that we can't see that. We can't, like, look at all the data and see and understand, like, the complex interaction of human beings and people that are around them that influence them. And, you know, that they get encouragement and then they get positive feedback. And then they show up at school wearing lipstick and everyone's like, you're amazing. You're amazing now, Bobby. Like, now that you're Roberta, like, now you're amazing. You used to be some guy that got stuffed into a locker and now your girl is incredible. And you're giving them this positive feedback. And it's money. And it's the people are profiting off of it. It's fucking insane. And it's so wild to watch it all play out and realize, like, we are so vulnerable to influence. Human beings are so, I mean, this is why cults exist. This is why people are willing to be religious martyrs and blow themselves up. And which, by the way, like, why do they do that? Why do they get kids to wear suicide vests? Because you can't convince a 55-year-old guy to do it. 55 guy with a job and a family and a lot of, you know, interests and good friends. Tough to get him to wear that suicide vest. Right. You know, he's like, what? What am I doing? I'm going to a mall? What the fuck? No, why am I doing that? I'm going to heaven? Yeah. And I'm going to get 72 virgins? Can you show me these virgins? Right. Like, is there a fucking... What happened to them? How do these poor virgins wind up in heaven just getting raped by this 55-year-old guy who blew himself up? Like, this is fucking insane.
Insane. I know.
Well, you can't get adults to believe that, but you can get children to believe that. So we don't want to, like, take that same ability to influence and then just transfer it over to children. And
I'm not quite sure why the human mind is so fragile. I've asked myself that so many times. And this is going to sound totally off-piste here, but you brought up demons and what have you. And I just watched that. I didn't read the book, so forgive me. But I watched the documentary on the book, Chaos, on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, I read the book.
Okay. Are you not completely... I cannot wrap my head around how Manson got seemingly normal people to commit this kind of murder. And when you listen to these women talk about it, they're like, and then I stabbed her 15 times and I felt the knife go into her hip bone. And she looked at me and said, I'm dead. And that, like, no emotion. What did you do to this woman's mind? And you can't say she's an outlier.
Right.
Because he was able to convince the group of people.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot understand this kind of...
Well, that's
fragility.
Complex.
What is
well, that's
that?
MK
but
Ultra.
Is it that? Do
oh,
you
yeah.
think
no,
it's that?
No, 100%. That's Jolly West. Jolly West was the CIA operative who visited Manson in jail. He's also the guy that visited Jack Ruby after he shot Kennedy. And then
right,
Jack
okay.
Ruby starts saying, I'm seeing demons and the Jews are on fire. And, you know, Jack Ruby didn't have a history of mental illness like that, like complete psychotic breakdowns. But he did after Jolly West visited him in jail. Yeah, there was like, there's like real documentation about those experiments. One of them is Operation Midnight Climax. So the CIA was operating brothels, and they were operating brothels where they would have two-way mirrors, and they would be behind the mirrors, and these prostitutes who were working for the CIA would give the Johns LSD, and then they would observe them. This is all
I knew a little bit about MK Ultra, obviously, and that they were using psychedelics to influence people and try to gain
LSD
mind control.
In particular, yeah.
Okay, so here's my question, though. This is what I find so fascinating. Do you think that the LSD simply accelerated that mental vulnerability or the ability to warp someone's mind? Because when you tell people now you're going to perform a sex change on a child, they think that's a good idea. And I'll tie it back to one thing that also is seemingly unrelated, but everyone's outraged about RFK. He's not a doctor. Oh my God, he's trying to get to the root of autism and he's misguided about it. Where was your outrage when Xavier Becerra, who's not a doctor, wanted to remove all age limits for sex changes on kids, whether surgery or not, the medicalization component that we talked about? Like, that to me is a group psychosis. I wonder, to get an adult to, I'm like, where's your outrage and your concern about this? Because this is batshit crazy.
Right.
And nobody said a word. Nobody cared. It went completely under the radar. And I'm just wondering if the ability to capture someone's mind in the way that they did, these CIA studies, did LSD simply accelerate a vulnerability that's already pre-existing, and you're watching the brainwashing of people go on over the course of decades? Because if you said this to a person, arguably when in Obama's first term, when he ran on gay marriage, that you were going to run sex changes on children in the year 2024, people would have lost their friggin' mind.
Right.
So it's just a complete... It is. It's just, they must have been brainwashed, though.
Yeah, it is brainwashing. And cults, we all know that cults are real, right?
Yes.
We all know about the Manson family. We all know about Jim Jones. We all know about cults. And we know that human beings are very vulnerable to group influence. Now, when you have someone that's actually being trained by people that are psychologists and that understand influence, and then also trained in using the implantation of LSD on these people, one of the things that Manson would do is he would pretend to take LSD, and then he would give it to them and then influence them while they were under the influence and he was sober. And this was all learned through the Harvard LSD studies, which, by the way, created the Unabomber. Ted Kaczynski was a part of the Harvard LSD studies.
Oh my God, how do I not know this?
Yeah, well,
I know he was a genius.
Yeah,
there
was a bunch of things wrong with him. First of all, when he was a baby, he was severely ill, and they put him in some sort of an infirmary, and he didn't have any human touch for months.
Wow.
For months. They when he cried and he's in his crib, they left him there. His brother talked about it. There's a documentary on Netflix about him, and his brother talked about, like, even before the Harvard LSD studies, he was, like, really fucked up, complete lack of empathy. Like, and just
a sociopath.
Yeah, complete sociopath. Yeah. As a young man, and it would express itself when he would experience rejection from women. He would have, like, violent reactions to that rejection and write them horrific letters and torture them and yell at them.
Oh,
and
Jesus, it's yeah. so scary.
And then he goes through the Harvard LSD studies, which a part of his particular studies was humiliation. So he would be under the influence and they would humiliate him and they would abuse him and try to get him to a certain state of mind. So then this guy goes off to Berkeley, becomes a professor, and his whole idea is to just make enough money so that he can implement this program. Here's what's crazy about his ideas. He's kind of right.
Okay.
So he's kind of right, and he thinks that technology is going to replace human beings. Like, he sees this through all of his acid trips, that human beings are going to be replaced. And we probably are.
Yeah.
We probably are going to be replaced by AI.
It's
we
happening.
Probably are going to be replaced by synthetic life that we create. And we're facilitating that with our reliance on technology. So he decides he's going to live off the grid in a cabin and kill all the people that are involved in technology. A very twisted, distorted reaction to this thing that we're recognizing as being real in 2025, that we are experiencing. We have AI on our phones now.
Right.
You know, we're constantly being monitored. We're constantly being surveilled. Your rights are getting very murky because all of your data is being given away. Everybody knows everything about you. It's easy to influence people with algorithms and also with bots. And it's being used for political discourse.
Completely.
It's being used for so many different things. Essentially, you know, we don't want to think that cults can be half the country, but for sure it can be half the country. It can be the whole country. If you live under Sharia law, it's the whole country.
Of course.
The whole country believes that women have to cover every part of their body except their eyeballs. You know,
yes.
And this is this kind of thinking. We're very vulnerable to groupthink, and especially groupthink that's being, like, intentionally manipulated also, and then being done with psychedelic drugs. Now, they did it during the Manson era because they were trying to stop the anti-war movement. So they were trying to, like, the hippies and all these people that were like, hey, make love, not war.
Right.
Like, we have to change the association that the general public has with these people because too many people are joining up with them. And so what they did was they got the Manson family and they got him to commit these horrific crimes. And every time Charles Manson would get arrested, he would get let out of jail. I mean, he was violating parole left and right. And the cops that arrested him were all being told when they were interviewed, they would say, this is above my pay grade. They're telling me that I have to let him go. So they would be contacted by someone from the State Department or wherever and saying, let him go.
I saw that somewhat alluded to in the documentary of, like, well, you know, when the one guy, I'm going to botch this, never mind. Bottom line is they generally alluded to that. But because I didn't read the book, there wasn't that kind of in-depth takeaway at
all.
Yeah,
unfortunately, the documentary is only, like, what, like 90 minutes?
It's very short.
Yeah,
the book draws a connection, but it doesn't prove out its points.
Yeah.
And I couldn't quite understand. I'm like, well, where's the proof of that until you just explained it
to me. Tom O'Neill, the guy who wrote that book, is he's been on the podcast before. He was my friend Greg Fitzsimmons' neighbor in New York, and he was writing this 20 plus years. So Greg was his friend when it was happening, like when he started. So what he was doing is he was writing an article. I think it was for Vanity Fair or Variety, I forget. But the article was on the anniversary of the Manson killings. And so it was supposed to be just like, hey, this is the anniversary, just write an article about the facts. So he starts going into the facts of the case and he's like, what, wait a minute. And so he starts investigating, and he can't investigate enough. And then he gets in trouble because, like, the deadline's passed. And then he gets a book deal, and the deadline passes on that. He's just completely obsessed with getting to the bottom of this and absorbing more and more information and documenting it all. He's got enough for many books. And I believe he's writing another book right now.
That is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
You know that the huge irony is that these drugs can, as we both know, these drugs can save lives.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to Callie and Brigham, and you know, who are involved in the Texas Ibogaine Initiative. And what's so fascinating is—
Very different drug.
But what about psilocybin? Like when I talk to—
Also very different drug.
Is it really?
Very, very different drug. Yeah, LSD is very different.
So they didn't
use
psilocybin or ibogaine or any of that stuff.
No, not with that, but perhaps you could if you did it correctly, if you knew how to manipulate people. Like Jolly West was well-versed in manipulation. I mean, this was the whole part of the CIA's program. And by the way, it's not just the CIA. It's other intelligence agencies. MI5 was doing it. The UK studies on psychedelics, you could see the videos of British troops on acid. They dosed up these British troops from, I want to say it's the 1950s. Do you know that video, Jamie? You know the video. We've played it before. But these guys are, you know, with full fatigues, just laughing, leaning up against trees, laughing. They gave them LSD.
To what end?
Well, they want to find out what it does. They thought it was a truth serum. Turns out it's not. Like, well, what can it do? And then so they used people to try to figure out what can be done with it. So this is 25 minutes. Let's put your headphones on real quick.
Okay.
The first effects of the drug became apparent. 25 minutes
later. The drug became apparent. The men began to relax and to giggle. But this man was more seriously affected and had to be removed from the exercise. After 35 minutes, one of the radio operators had become incapable of using his set, and the efficiency of the rocket launcher team was also very impaired. 10 minutes later, the attacking section had lost all sense of urgency. Notice the bunching and indecision as they enter a wood occupied by the enemy. Almost immediately, the section commander tried to use a map to find the location of troop headquarters, and a prisoner's escort had to have the way pointed out to him, although it was in plain sight, 700 yards away over open country. 50 minutes after taking the drug, radio communication had become difficult, if not impossible, but the men are still capable of sustained physical effort. This man nearly succeeded in felling this tree using only a spade. However, constructive action was still attempted by those retaining a sense of responsibility in spite of physical symptoms. But 1 hour and 10 minutes after taking the drug, with one man climbing a tree to feed the birds, the troop commander gave up, admitting that he could no longer control himself or his men.
Yeah, so this is one of the first experiments they did with LSD and soldiers.
Would you be trying to spray the air over the opposition? I mean, otherwise,
you could infect their food supply. You could infect their water supply.
So using it against your enemy, so to speak.
Yeah, you could do that.
I mean,
there was also some experiments that they ran. I think it was in St. Louis, where they were using a fan and they were spraying things, aerosol spraying, to see what kind of effect things would have on people. Like, our government, if you give them the license, right? I don't want to say our government. Let's just stop saying that. Let's just say human beings with unchecked power.
Yeah.
Human beings with unchecked power that are, they have an imperative. Like, What are they trying to do? Well, they're trying to figure out what this stuff does and what's the best way to do it. You tried it out on soldiers. Like, they've always done that with vaccines and a bunch of different experimental androgens. They've dosed them up with steroids and and all sorts of different things to increase aggression. Methamphetamine was used during the war to get kamikazes to fly their planes into boats.
The Nazis did it. Hitler was tweaked out of his skull.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
I've seen that footage of him. I think it was at the Olympics.
Yes, 1936 Olympics. Just fucking rocking. Just rocking.
I heard that they did not have, that they propped him up on that to the degree that he was able to subsequently convince Mussolini to jump into the mix.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus.
Have you ever read Blitzed?
No.
Do we have it here still, Jamie? Norman Ohler wrote this insane book on the ubiquitous use of drugs during the Third Reich and how it caused them to go through Poland in 3 days because they stayed up for three fucking days on meth. And they gave the most meth to the people that were driving the tanks because they were at the front. So it was like they gave different doses depending on what your job was. And they just methed up, ran through Poland, and they caught these people just like in France, like their soldiers were given wine. So these people were like drunk, and then the Nazis came through methed up and just fucking killed everybody.
You know, I've heard that. I don't know if this is true or not. So I heard that similar things were given. Forgive me for throwing this out there. It could be total bullshit, but to Hamas on the October 7th attack in order to be able to commit those kinds of atrocities.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. I've heard it through friends who are Israeli. It could be bullshit. But I would wonder if you have to commit those kinds of violent acts against another human being. I would imagine you'd have to be altered in some capacity. I can't even fathom being able to. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around
it. I think human beings are capable of great atrocities without any kind of
one-on-one like that, though?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they do it. I mean, look at Vietnam. Look at the things that people did during Vietnam. I don't think they dosed them up in Vietnam.
No, I guess you're right.
And, you know, in Vietnam, people were taking heroin and smoking weed, and they were still doing that. It's people have an evil capacity to other people and decide. I mean, you see it politically. You know, in this country, like people on the left will demonize people on the right. People on the right will demonize people on the left. It's just like, it's a tribal thing that it's an echo of our past, because essentially when we were small tribes of 150 people and then you got invaded by a neighboring tribe, you had to be able to commit extreme violence against the other. And you had to be able to think of them as not you. That's not a person. That's them. And you have to be able to go after them.
I can understand that broadly.
And encouraged by the group. And
okay, right, fair.
Yeah.
But the...
Yeah,
some
no,
of it is
I get
just
it.
So visceral and hideous. And I don't mean to bring the vibe down. But it's one thing to kill another human being. That I have to. This is how we survive. Or whatever it is. We're fighting Nazis and you don't have a choice. Okay, fair. But to beheads, just the, you know, the that kind of stuff, I just think
torture. Yeah,
I often ask this is going to a very unplanned place, but I ask myself what I'm capable of if somebody hurt my kids or hurt my wife or hurt my mom. Like, what would I be capable of doing?
I bet you'd be capable of extreme violence.
I think, without question, but I would be capable of it, but I don't like blood. I can't stand blood. I don't like guts. It would make me sick. It would horrify me. So I'm like, how would I? This is the shit that tortures me in the middle of the night when I can't sleep. Like, how far removed am I from this mentality? Like, am I just a few catastrophes away from losing my mind and becoming a lunatic?
Well, but, that's the appeal of The Walking Dead.
Right.
The Walking Dead,
yes,
the,
you're
the
right.
Zombies become inconsequential. The real right. problem is people.
Yes, that's so true. And I could do a hell of a lot of horrendous things, but I couldn't, like, some of the torture methods, I don't think, how do you have the stomach for it?
Well, like, look at what they did during the Inquisition. You can't say that that was drugs. These were people that just decided they were going to torture people. And they had, you know, they decided they othered people. And this is a really evil aspect of human nature.
How do you defend against it, do you think? Seriously, like, if we all have it in us. What is the antidote to that?
You have to have a strong army. You have people that can defend you against people that want to do that to people here. You know, and that's and then they have to have a strong ethical and moral foundation where they would never
be compromised.
They have to be the good guys. They have to think that they're the good guys and have a very strong ethical and moral foundation that doesn't allow them to compromise that.
It's tough though, because when people fight dirty, it's such a massive disadvantage.
Right.
That then you think, well, I'm gonna lose if I don't make this sacrifice in how I'm behaving or how I'm tackling this.
Well, we like to think that we're the good guys, but the biggest thing that's ever been done to human beings that's horrific is the nuclear bomb. Like indiscriminate killing of civilians, hundreds of thousands, boom, in one shot.
Okay, the argument being that you drop it and then the war ends.
Yeah.
So it's sure. the lesser of evils. You know, you've sacrificed how many hundreds of thousands of people in that moment, but did you save millions down the road? And can you justify the behavior utilizing that logic? Well, you know, I committed this atrocity, but I saved more lives. Like, that's the slippery slope that I think about often. Is, you were just talking about this the other day, when, you know, be careful you don't become a monster.
Yeah.
When you're fighting monsters.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's that, you know, fire fighting fire conversation. You want to use water, but what if it doesn't work?
Yeah, sometimes you have to become a monster.
Sometimes you, honestly, Joe, I hate to say it, but sometimes you have to.
Yeah, if you want to defeat evil, you have to become a monster. Because if you don't, you won't beat it. You have to do horrific things to beat horrific people. You have to kill them, right? Like, if someone's invading and they're shooting guns at people and they show up at the beach and they pull up in boats, right, and they start gunning people down,
yeah,
you have to do the same to stop that. You can't, like, bring out daisies and go, hey, guys... Like, I bake you these pot brownies, just like, let's just chill.
And try.
Let's just rethink, you know, this, man.
Sebastian Younger said this to me once. He's like, listen, if you aren't willing to talk to the worst enemy, you have to fight them. But it's when the talking doesn't work. And you see that all the time.
Yep.
You see, I see it in my own personal life. When all of my best intentions and my calmest demeanor and my most empathetic approach to something fails because you're just not dealing with somebody who is rational or well-intentioned.
Right.
And if you broaden that out...
Well, then imagine a language barrier. We have no idea what they're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then a cultural barrier where their culture believes that if they die, that they're going to go to heaven. And that there be a martyr, and so they're willing to do that. They're excited to die and to kill you with them, because they believe that the real prize is not in this life. It's in the next life.
Insane that we could.
But this is, we're very vulnerable. We're very vulnerable to this kind of thinking, and I don't know why we're designed this way.
I don't either.
It's a distortion, probably, of tribal survival primate instincts. You know, you see it with, have you ever watched Chimp Nation?
No, I was actually going to say animals don't have it, but then here we are.
Oh, they do.
Really?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I know lions will kill another, they're territorial, but the capacity for torture, I've never seen that in the animal kingdom. That kind
You ever see a cat with a mouse?
Okay. Yeah, I guess I have.
Yeah, they torture mice. They hold on to them, and then they let them go. And the mouse, like, oh, Jesus, he's going to let me go. Like, not today, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then they torture them and want to keep playing with them. Yeah, they have zero empathy. Cats are the worst.
Yeah.
They have zero empathy, especially house cats, because they're well-fed, right? So they're not doing it for food. They're just doing it because they have instincts to kill. Like, these instincts are being... They're being distorted, right? Because, like, the real instinct that they have to kill is so that they can survive. But when they're fully fed, they don't turn those instincts off. You know, now they just have this kill drive that's never satiated. And, you know, cats are the perfect killer. They move so fast. They're so stealthy. They have it from the time they're kittens. You see them crawl up to each other, like, very slowly, very slowly, jump on each other.
I'm thinking about our cat, actually, as you're talking.
Yeah.
And when we lived in Miami, he would use the dog door, and he would bring in iguanas.
Wow, yeah.
This big.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
My wife would be like, honey! You know, and he was chasing this fucking iguana around the house. Oh. It was ridiculous. Yeah, and he wouldn't kill it.
No, they're not trying to kill it. They're having fun.
He was having fun. Now that I mean,
you have
right.
a little murderer that you live with.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Cute little bastard, but yes.
That's what cats are, yeah. You know, and that's a part of their essence. I mean, they are the cleanup crew. They're there to make sure the populations don't get out of control.
God, you bring up such a great point.
Have you ever seen the numbers on cats, like domestic cats, what they kill every year?
The birds, I know they kill a crazy
billions.
Billions?
Billions. Billions of birds.
Oh, he's an indoor cat now. I just want everybody to know this.
Let's look at the numbers.
Jesus,
because
really?
We brought it up before, but it's worth repeating because it's kind of crazy. So it sort of illustrates his point. So this is like...
Billions?
Yes. B, with B. Like multiple...
I didn't know there were that many house cats.
Oh, it does. They don't have to be. They kill Street hundreds. Cat. Each cat. Feral cats are ruthless. House cats, feral cats, wild cats, any cat that's outside. Yeah, they instantly kill. Okay, here it is. Domestic cats are leading cause of bird deaths in the United States, estimated to kill 1.3 and 4 billion birds annually. This includes both pet cats and cats that roam outdoors and feral cats.
Jesus.
American Bird Conservancy estimates that free-ranging cats kill approximately 2.4 million. It's hard to know what the real numbers are.
Of course, right, yeah.
But they know it's high. It's in the billions.
It's in the billions.
But imagine how many birds there would be if cats didn't do that. Like, who's going to kill them? Like, the sky would be filled with birds. You go outside, you just get shit on everywhere.
Like Alfred Hitchcock movie.
It's kind of crazy.
I mean, when you do look back at the plague, and they started killing all the cats because they were associated with witches, and that's mm-hmm. when the plague was able to kind of run more rampant
right.
because the cats were keeping that rat population
yes.
down, and like the fleas on the rats caused...
Well, that's the coyote problem in California, right? Like, people are like, oh, I hate coyotes. Right. But do you hate coyotes more than you hate rats? Because coyotes are the reason why rats aren't everywhere, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, where I used to live, like, there was a lot of coyotes, but I don't see very many rats. And that's the reason why. Like,
yeah.
The wolves, the little wolves, which is what a coyote is, the
right.
small wolf, they're rat killers and rabbit killers and everything else they get a hold of.
I mean, it's obvious that they're playing a role
yeah.
in, you know, this control. Yeah, exactly. But because everyone in California just thinks they ate my Pomeranian. And I don't see beyond.
Oh, they probably did.
Yeah. And they probably did. I mean, as a child,
they ate my daughter's puppy. Yeah. But a mountain lion ate one of my dogs when I lived in Colorado.
Ugh,
yeah.
So
it's
hard.
Like, there's cats are motherfuckers, you know?
Yeah.
And predators, like, at least predators are doing it for food.
Well, I was going to say, you don't hold it against. As a child, I lost a dog to a coyote. To this day, I don't hate coyotes. It's like, well, the dog was in the yard and we didn't coyote proof the yard enough. Let's. Fucking coyote proof the yard.
You can't
now.
Really coyote proof your yard either. I had a coyote kill a chicken in my yard. We had a 6-foot tall wrought iron fence.
With the rollers on it?
No, we didn't have the rollers.
Okay.
But the coyote with the chicken in its mouth leaped to the top like a ballerina. Like, it was so elegant the way I was really impressed with its athleticism. And as a person who like admires physical feats, I was like, well, that's very impressive. Because with a chicken in its mouth, leaped up to the top of the fence, got its paws on it, went over just so gracefully and so adept. It was really impressive.
Okay, fair. This is, okay, I guess animals do have a propensity for cats in particular. I did not think of it that way. That makes me feel a little better.
The cat thing is fucked up because they're not even doing it for food. But it's like that thing inside of them has been, it's there. You can't satisfy it with just food. I mean, they literally are the cleanup crew for nature.
Right.
That's what they are in Africa. When you see them, they're looking for the wounded antelopes. They're looking for anybody who's old. They're looking for anybody who just can't run fast enough. And that's what they do. And that's how they keep the populations down. You know, this is the reason why they've reintroduced wolves into Colorado. And that's the reason why they reintroduced wolves in Montana. And the elk populations decreased significantly because the elk populations were out of control.
Right.
So they brought in wolves and the wolves like radically dropped the population down. And they even do surplus killing, where they'll kill a bunch of things where they can't eat, but just that they can't help themselves. They have the opportunity to kill, and so they do.
So what is the antidote to this within the human population? Because I see the necessity for survival, but it can make you quite depressed if you let it. It can make you a bit nihilistic.
Yeah.
And fighting for the hope and the good is so... My mom says that to me all the time, because when I try to show her some of the things you and I talked about in the beginning, And I'm like, don't you see? And this is rigged. And who's really pulling the strings? And these are bad guys. And she's like, honey, I'm 76. Like, leave me alone.
And it's fine.
I want to.
There's nothing wrong with that.
You know, she's like, I want to see the good in people. Try to see Mr. Rogers, look for the helpers. But you can fall into really becoming nihilistic about humanity when you witness these things and have these conversations. And I try so hard to not go there in my head, but it's hard not to.
Well, we are primitive.
And I've become that way.
We're a primitive evolving species, and we're still trapped with these primate bodies. We're territorial primates with weapons, you know, and we're still trapped with the same instincts that got us to the dance, the same instincts that caused us to create walled cities, which, you know, allowed us to survive, and then agriculture, which allowed us to develop surpluses, and then people wanted those surpluses, nomads, and then they came in, the roving barbarians, the Mongolian hordes, you know, this is like all a part of our history. And this is the battle of good versus evil. And the battle of good versus evil, I think this duality has to exist. I think you have to have good to combat evil, and you have to have evil to keep good in check, like to enhance good and to force people to really to rise and to innovate and to figure out how to defeat evil. Without evil and without the idea of these hordes, we never would have developed cities. If we never developed cities, we never would have gone through the Industrial Revolution. We wouldn't develop cities if we were just like roving, peaceful, nomadic hunter-gatherers. We would be the same.
It serves its purpose. I've read all my Khalil Gibran. It's like, you know, the deeper your pain, like the more ability you have for empathy. And I get all of it, but it's seemingly imbalanced now. And I guess that's what I mean.
It's always like that, but that is what causes people to strive to do better.
I hope you're right, Joe.
I think it is.
You're definitely one of those guys, which is why, bringing it back to the very beginning, I think that you're number one, but I also think, you know, you're one out of quite a few.
Well,
I hope you're right.
You know, you have to have principles that you live your life by, right? And be aware of evil, but do your best to be good.
Yeah, and you see the fight.
Without evil, like, you have no desire to be good. Like, why be wonderful? Why be kind? And why, there's no contrast. There's nothing you're fighting against. Like, this is, unfortunately, what motivates entropy.
What makes you choose, though? Okay, so another thing that I've thought about often is, like, evil never stops going. Have you ever heard that, like, good has to decide when it gets out of bed in the morning? Like, you're on the freeway, and someone's is broken down on the side of the freeway, and it's like, are you late for something? Are you worried? There are a million things that will influence whether or not I stop that day. But a bad guy will always see an opportunity to go after that person. Evil works tirelessly, and good requires a sacrifice. You sacrifice yourself.
Way less evil than there is good.
Your mic just cut off.
Mine did?
Yeah. Did you disconnect the mic cable?
Me? No.
I think it's disconnected. Where the mic?
Too dark of a conversation. It's like, that's it. No more of this dark shit.
Is it back now? Oh, yep. Oh, that's weird. I didn't even touch it. Okay,
this is a sign for evil.
Evil's trying to stop me from saying, the moment I'm saying there's more good than there is evil,
the mic disconnects.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, evil can co-opt people, and because good people can become evil when they experience so much evil that they have to become, you know, become a monster, fight against monsters.
I'm seeing it even in the health space. Brigham is dealing with the FDA stuff right now, and I was talking to him this morning, and he's like, Jillian, and he's talking about trying to compound peptides, and there's a war on peptides, and there's a war on stem cells, and of course, it's like the cutting edge of medicine, but he's like describing what they're going up against in dealing with this, and it's evil. Like, why would you want to prevent these life-saving treatments?
Well, that's a perfect example. Yeah. That's money. And if money is the devil, that's a perfect example.
How much do you need, though, Joe?
Yeah,
that's my question.
It's not you, though. The problem is, corporations, I'm sure you've seen this before, corporations behave like a psychopath, right? Because corporations don't have humanity. And when you have a corporation, which I don't know how we get away from not having corporations, so what's the solution there? But corporations have an obligation to their shareholders.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to do fucked up things in order to make more money. And that's when you're in the business of drugs. Like, that's like, if you're in the business of making movies, I mean, what fucked up things can you do to make more movies and make movies that more people are going to see? Really nothing. It's like you just have to make them resonate with people. Yeah. But if you're selling drugs, well, boy, you can influence people. You can lie about studies. You can have your scientists perform studies and then throw out all the studies that don't jive with whatever you're trying to sell.
Compounding.
And then you
pharmacies
can
kicking compromise. Them out. Yeah.
Yeah, you compromise all these politicians and get them to repeat your narratives.
That should be illegal, though.
Oh, yeah.
That should be illegal. You should be able to get rid of
citizens. But the problem is it's not. So how do you get it out?
You gotta reform campaign finance. Do you remember many moons ago, I believe it was John Edwards, who was running on that many moons ago. But as a kid, I didn't fully understand what that meant. As an adult, no one's ever brought that. I mean, kind of, Bernie.
Here's step one. You gotta say they can't advertise. That's
they
number one.
They can't do it.
Because not only is it not, advertising is not really the problem, it's part of the problem, but the real problem is when they advertise, and Callie Means talked about this extensively, now the media will not criticize them because they're responsible for an enormous percentage of their income.
70%+. But the issue, I had this conversation recently, and the issue is going to be freedom of speech here. It's going to be a First Amendment fight.
But that's not a First Amendment
thing.
They're
going to argue it is,
Joe.
Because
you could still do it on social media. You could still like make your own podcast if you're Pfizer.
That's the angle they're going to take. I am sure of it.
Right, but you can't advertise for cigarettes on television. Why? Because we've decided that
kids, I think it's kids. I've heard this conversation, and I'm trying to remember who one of the researchers was, but Callie was there, Mark Hyman was there, and they were having this exact conversation, and one of the people on the other side was suggesting that they've already gamed this out, and that's the way that they're going to go.
Yeah, well, ironically, this is self-sabotage for the media itself because no one takes them seriously anymore because they don't do that, because they don't criticize the pharmaceutical drug companies. They don't talk about vaccine side effects. They don't talk about pharmaceutical drug side effects. They don't.
They make you look like you're insane when you do.
You're a crazy person.
I was on CNN talking about Ozempic one time, and they essentially called me anti-science because I suggested that a lot of the drugs, I was like, well, they're like, well, we give people statins and we give people blood pressure medication.
Don't look at the fucking data on statins, by the way.
I was initiating that conversation and I was called anti-science. And
well, that's not even anti-science. They don't understand the data.
They won't even allow you to express that on the show anymore. Then never again invited,
of course,
on CNN.
Because they're compromised. It's not really news. It's only the news that they feel compelled to talk about due to their financial interests.
They buy the narrative.
But the problem with that, like, look at the ratings on CNN. They're fucking collapsing. And they're in a spiral. Why? Because no one trusts them anymore. So the public trust has been eroded because of their own desire to make more money.
There's an opportunity where a network wanted me to compete against these GLP-1 drugs. And everyone loves the idea, but the top concern is, oh, what if Jillian wins? And then it'll be a catastrophe. So the ad sales department is like, I don't know that we can do this. We can't call it Jillian versus. We can't call it that. What are we going to call it? I don't know how we're going to position this. And I was like, we don't even need to bash it. Let me just do my job. Let's see what happens. But they're even afraid. Like, God forbid I won.
Yeah.
And was able to do it naturally.
Do you think there's an argument for GLP-1 drugs, though, for people who are morbidly obese? Because I kind of do.
Okay. So here's where I've gotten to on all medications, largely. It's a cost-benefit analysis. So if you brought an individual who was morbidly obese and already had atherosclerosis and type 2 diabetes and chronic kidney disease, and you said, we've tried everything, they're at death's door, and this is arguably the last step. Well, in that case, the downsides of the medications are far less than not trying it. So in that instance, you could twist my arm for sure. But if you gave me my way, I would prefer to look at what the medications like Ibogaine or psilocybin could do for the psychological component, the addictive component.
Yes.
One treatment.
Yeah.
Doesn't go on forever. And then, because diet and exercise do work, what's stopping them from engaging in those habits consistently is all the stuff we talked about in the beginning, the psychological component, the physical addiction. So, you know, no one's ever tried it, though. So there's no way to actually know. And you can't, it's almost impossible to do the research on it, which is, again, why the Texas Ibogaine Initiative is so important.
Yeah.
Because you can begin this kind of research, although it is in veterans and addiction and so on. But would that be the first step? And when I've asked the people in the space, like Matt Shepard, for example, who is at Shepard Pratt, and one of the guys that's like the foremost experts on psilocybin and treating addiction, he's like, yeah, theoretically, it would work great. Theoretically. So for me, I'm like, if we got all the way to this place and I had no choice, that's like saying, Jill, if someone had stage 4 cancer, would you do chemo? I mean, I guess so. But I'd like to, if there was an alternative way forward, or if we could prevent it to begin with, that would be ideal. So you could twist my arm to that point. I think there's something to be said for, again, what Brigham is doing at Ways to Well, which is why being able to compound the GLP-1 drugs allows you to titrate the dose. So when people argue with me on this matter, they'll suggest that a titrated dose, a lesser amount of these drugs, can be effective with significantly less side effects. But you know, when they're trying to block that and you can't even explore it.
Yeah. It's all weird because I think the problem also is competition, right? If Ibogaine becomes ubiquitous and these clinics become everywhere, the real issue becomes, how much does that compete with the pharmaceutical drug market's value? How much does that decrease their ability to profit? And it's probably significantly.
I mean, if it impacts antidepressants alone, that's significant. Yeah. If one treatment could have the impact on obesity that it does on opioid addiction, I mean, GLP-1s are the most profitable drug of all.
But here's the thing. If they do allow the use of Ibogaine and then also they allow the use of psilocybin, if more people start taking it, more people are not going to buy whatever the pharmaceutical drug companies are selling, and they'll just naturally sort of deteriorate. You're always going to have fools. You're always going to have people that just want to, what do I take? I'll take it. There's always going to be people like that. Those people are there to give you a lesson without you having to fall prey to the folly that they have fallen prey to. I think that's the same with a lot of addictions, particularly gambling addiction. You know, I'm in Vegas all the time and I don't gamble. I play blackjack for fun, but like $20 here, $100. Right. I don't get it, but I see it. I see that crazed look in the. I think gambling addiction is one of the weirder ones. I've been around it a good portion of my life, and it's the sweaty fucking faces. This need to gamble is really nuts, and that's another part of the human reward system that's been hijacked.
Intermittent rewarding, is the most powerful.
That's crazy.
It's a study. Have you ever seen it with like the rats where they push the button, no food comes out. Push the button, food comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones that get the intermittent food reward will sit there and push that damn button until they collapse of exhaustion. The ones that push for a little while, get nothing, give up. The ones that push until they get food every time, get
it's
full and give up.
Slot machine logic. It's the same thing.
Yep. It's that intermittent reinforcement.
Yeah, we're
exceptionally powerful.
Easy to manipulate. We're weird creatures.
I know.
Yeah, and it's all our survival instincts get hijacked.
But if you gave them an alternative path when they are ready for help,
right?
When the horse is ready to drink and you had an alternative method that we're seeing work.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. Ugh. You have to have freedom of the use of these alternative methods. And I think naturally those would overcome. They would succeed. I think you'd still probably have gambling addicts. You still probably would have people that want to take all the pharmaceutical drugs, like whatever the doctor wants to prescribe to them. But it would be less and less.
I think.
And they don't want that, which is why you're seeing the pushback from the FDA with peptides and all these different things, is because they're concerned that if you give people a bunch of things that are going to make them healthy, they're not going to take as many pharmaceutical drugs.
Oh, without question. I mean, which is why there's no model for prevention in healthcare.
It's
not profitable at all. But it's ridiculous. There's a peptide called cerebrolysin that they give to stroke patients in other parts of the developed world that can have a massive impact as well on cognitive function and can be neuroprotective. You can't even buy it here. Literally, I had to find it in Austria, ship it into the country, and Brigham and Dr. Rexford, I was like, now what do I do with this? He's like, Brigham had to walk me through how to use it on freaking FaceTime. He's like, you should snap it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It is insane.
It's pretty crazy.
And I like,
by the way, there's a new stroke drug that I actually just sent my friend Rich, because our friend Keith Robinson, I don't have his number, but he suffered from a stroke. And there's some new drug that, I'll send this to you, Jamie. These UCLA scientists have developed, oh, you got it already. They developed first drug rehabilitation to repair brain damage. Drug replicated the recovery of movement control produced by rehab in mice.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so this is March 18th. New study by UCLA Health has discovered what researchers say is the first drug to fully reproduce the effects of physical stroke rehabilitation in model mice following from human studies. Yeah. So, which is wonderful. It's amazing. I mean, so this is the benefit of pharmaceutical drugs.
Yes.
Like, there are some pharmaceutical drugs that are wonderful. So the goal is to have a medicine that stroke patients can take that produces the effects of rehabilitation. Dr. S. Thomas Carmichael, the study's lead author and professor and chair of UCLA Neurology, rehabilitation after stroke is limited in its actual effects because most patients cannot sustain the rehab intensity needed for stroke recovery. Further, stroke recovery is not like most other fields of medicine where drugs are available to treat the disease, such as cardiology, infectious disease, or cancer. Carmichael said, rehabilitation is a physical medicine approach that has been around for decades. We need to move rehabilitation into an era of molecular medicine. Oh, so this is why, you know, you don't want to throw the baby
You're
out
totally
with the bathwater.
Totally right. It's always like that, though. Everything
of course,
is a U-shaped curve.
Yeah, there's drugs that the pharmaceutical drug companies make that help people and heal them and fix them and save their lives. And,
I couldn't agree with you more.
But you have to contain
Goldilocks.
Them. Just like you have to, you know, keep your kids from eating all the sugar.
Completely.
Yeah.
I mean, I just got whooping cough. And Joe, I literally thought I was going to die. I ended up at week 7. I called my internist and I was like, I think you need to check me in the fucking hospital. This is insane. I think I'm going to die. And they hit me with the horns. And the long story short is, I am vaccinated for it, but I guess my vaccination or my booster is old. I don't even remember the last time I got it. My wife is vaccinated. My kids are vaccinated for it. My mom is vaccinated for it. Everybody in my circle is vaccinated. No one got it. I strongly recommend getting your DTaP vaccine because whooping cough, it was 100 days of it. So my point being, like, I don't want the COVID Jillian, I don't want the COVID vaccine and I don't need it. But I, in any universe for me personally, if I would have known I was behind on that booster, it's like everything has a cost benefit analysis. Mm-hmm. Everything, it's like the dose is what makes the poison. Everything is that U-shaped curve, and approaching it with nuance is really the only intelligent way forward to make the best decisions for yourself. But you need the right information to
do
that.
And we need to have actual access to data. And this is a real problem that we've had in the last few decades, because there's been this revolving door between the FDA and pharmaceutical drug companies. So people that are the head, I think it's like 7 out of 8 heads of the FDA went on to work for pharmaceutical drug companies.
Revolving door, 100%.
So you've developed these relationships with these pharmaceutical drug companies where you're like, they're funding the studies, they're funding all, and then you leave and then you go to work for them and you get a nice cushy job. So you kind of like,
I can make it worse. I was when I was at the Senate testimony, I can't remember how many months ago that was, but Callie Means had us meeting with different senators and their aides, and a kid came up to me and I of course brought that up, and he's like, it's so much worse than that. And I was like, elaborate, what do you mean it's so much worse than that? And he said, essentially, they developed the drug, have stock in the company, go to work at the FDA, approve the drug, and go back to the drug company. I was like, oh, there's another step. Okay, got it.
It's so crazy. It should be completely illegal. Yeah, I mean, want to talk about a conflict of interest. That's the biggest conflict ever. And you're dealing with billions of dollars in profit.
I was working on a book, or have been working on a book, where it looks at each and every law that was put into place with good intentions. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and how each and every one was co-opted by big food, or big ag, or big pharma to wreak complete havoc and destruction.
Yeah.
And that's what you see.
That's what you see. And you're going to keep seeing that if nothing gets changed. And that's what's encouraging about this administration. So the thing that I was most excited about was Bobby Kennedy. When Bobby Kennedy united with Trump, I was like, okay, I'm in. Because, like, if he can get in there, you can see real change that's going to affect the way our lives are forever. That's going to change things. It's going to give people a real understanding of what's going on behind the scenes, why you've been lied to, why all these drugs are everywhere, why you're seeing poor health outcomes, why we're the richest nation in the world, but also the sickest. You know, why, and across the board with education, we're the richest nation in the world. We have terrible education scores. Like, why? Why, since we developed the Department of Education, have our scores plummeted? Like, what is that? And again, road to hell,
yes,
good intentions.
100%. I was speaking with Kelly, and he's like, you know, don't pull punches, because you want to be diplomatic. But I am finding myself defending Kennedy, who, by the way, I've met twice. I don't work for this administration. I have no personal affiliation. It's just right and wrong. There is a huge problem that needs to be addressed, and this administration wants to address it. And yet you are seeing the resistance. You are seeing the opposition flood the zone with hysteria. 24/7, and it's crazy. It's constantly taking people off piste. Like, oh, I actually did an interview the other day on News Nation where the host is like, well, you know, he promised results on autism by September, and that's unrealistic. And I was like, who gives a fuck if it's unrealistic? Aren't you glad we're looking at it?
Yeah.
It's genetic. I'm like, do you really believe that?
Why would anybody say that without doing decades of research themselves?
Do you really think?
Do you know California's, it's now some insane number, like 1 in 12 boys?
It's higher in California, obviously, than anywhere else in the country, and boys in particular over girls.
Yeah.
But the reality is that we don't know.
Well, they also think that one of the reasons why it's boys over girls is, like, in girls, it's, like, less obvious. It's less diagnosed.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I've seen that. I'm not sure if that's true either, because that's the argument also. It's like, oh, autism has always been here. It just hasn't been diagnosed correctly. Like,
that was debunked, though, by the Mind Institute at UC Davis. It was like, no, the bullshit. It was one in 150 20 years ago.
But people don't want to admit they did that to their kids, and so they will defend it to the death. Just like people who have turned their kids trans don't want to admit that these are chemical castration drugs. They don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit that they possibly have contributed to mental disease, to mental health disease, to anxiety and depression and suicide. No, no, no. Would you rather have a live boy or a dead girl? Like,
right,
what?
Exactly.
What are you fucking saying?
But it's, like, a closed system. And what I mean by that is, even if I did the gimme, oh, you're right, autism is genetic. Well, what about the rise in early onset cancer diagnosis, the rise in obesity, the steady increase of infertility year after year after year? We went from adult onset diabetes to type 2 diabetes, because children have type 2 diabetes now. How far you want to push it? People are not stupid. They're not. You can capture them to a point, but when the evidence is overwhelming, we are sicker than ever, and the resistance is mind-blowing to this guy every day. Oh, well, now, you know, he fired the guy that's tracking gonorrhea. I'm like, well, you know what? I mean, wear a fucking condom, for God's sake. Like, if you're that worried, hopefully that guy will get his job back. But at the end of the day, he's also tackling the grass rule and trying to get to the bottom of autism and getting poison out of baby formula and removing soda from snaps. It's just like, where is the perspective for the general public to read through the media bullshit?
Well, the problem is it's gone tribal, right? And when you have an us versus them thing going on, which is what we do here in this country, You know, like I keep seeing like people online saying in these dark times, like,
yes,
are these times so dark? Like, what is happening? That, you know, it's dark. Yeah. If you're living in Gaza, it's pretty fucking dark. If you're living in Ukraine, pretty dark. But like here is, have things gone dark? Like, you know, they're calling this totalitarian regime. Like,
right.
Okay, what's totalitarian? That they're cutting fraud and waste? Like, have you paid attention to the fraud and waste? Have you paid attention to the fact they spent $250 million on transgender animal studies? Like,
right.
Where's your fucking money going? You're not concerned with this unchecked spending that this government has been able to do for decade upon decade and these millions of NGOs? Do you know there's an NGO in India for every 600 people?
I have heard it's a CIA / I've watched that episode
there's
with Mike Benz, at least 10 of them.
3 million NGOs in India. There's an NGO in India for every 600 people. And this is why we're $36 trillion in debt.
Let me play those
numbers are nuts.
Can I be the opposition on
sure,
this?
Sure, please do.
Okay. There's children that are starving, Joe. You've taken their food away.
Well, we definitely shouldn't do that.
You know what?
You know, if you can prove that this,
right.
This is also the problem with charities. This is the dark truth of charities, is that most charities, the money goes to bureaucracy. A huge percentage of it goes to overhead. And in fact, most charities, the vast majority of the money never gets to the charity.
Homelessness in California,
yeah.
$24 billion gone. Where is it?
It was.
Yeah. Where's the money?
Spent
and the
on
problem's worse.
Free needles or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was spent on.
It wasn't even. It's probably fraud and waste.
It's both.
And there's also in the, well, my friend Colion Noir, he brought this up and I was never aware of it until he said it. He went to San Francisco and he saw the rampant, and he's a lawyer. So he went to San Francisco and he saw all this homelessness and he's like, what is the problem? There's not enough funding. And a guy over there going, no, you don't understand. It's the opposite. There's a business now.
Yeah.
So these people that are working in the homeless, you know, whatever the organization, they're making $250,000 a year.
$500,000 in some cases.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen Anna Kasparian talk about this, but she can elaborate on this subject matter to the point that you literally want to forcibly remove Gavin Newsom from office. It is staggering, and some of them $500,000
yeah.
and nothing.
They're doing a great job.
Problems
just imagine if
worse.
They weren't there, how much homeless we'd have. We'd all be homeless.
I know. This is you've seen him talk
everyone
about,
would be homeless, so just relax.
Well, you know, it's I just had this conversation actually. I was talking to Carolla and he was telling me that Gavin Newsom had told him back in the day that the face of homelessness was not addiction and mental illness, it was women and children. And there's a loophole. A friend of mine who's a reporter with the New York Times looked into it because she's like, why didn't you push back on that? I'm like, because he's right. She goes, no. I looked into it and it's women and children. And then she ended up getting to the bottom of the loophole. And the way that he was able to put forward that narrative is that homeless is a person without a stable address. And that's predominantly women and children, but unsheltered is what we consider homeless. The people in the streets and the tent camps. And arguably, that is largely.
So what is, I don't understand, what's the definition?
Okay, so Newsom was saying to Carolla, like, you're so insensitive, and the face of
the children don't own homes?
He was saying that women, like the mom that owns two jobs, that's who I'm trying to save. Like, we don't need to tackle addiction, and we don't need to tackle mental illness, because this is about the underprivileged individual, the female, single mom with two kids, who, you know, this is the face of homelessness. And Carolla was like, you're a sociopath. It's addicts and people with mental illness. And I ended up then in a debate with this journalist who's lovely, named Molly. And she's like, well, the statistics say that homelessness is, in fact, women and children. But when I challenged her and sent her to San Francisco, whatever, we go back and forth. And she ended up coming back to me after doing the homework, and there is a distinction between homeless and unsheltered. So homeless are people with unstable addresses, and that is women and children. So I'm like,
I
couldn't quite extrapolate what.
So is it like divorce?
I guess it's like in temporary housing or, you know, in an apartment somewhere. But unsheltered, the people on the street that you and I would go, homeless.
Okay.
In the tent camp outside on the sidewalk.
So they're playing semantics.
That's what he's doing.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm trying
How
to get at.
Gross.
Yes. I'm sorry. Cannot stand the guy.
Well, if you see these tent communities, you see clearly that you're dealing with drug addiction and mental illness.
But don't believe what you see with your own eyes.
Right.
That's the game across the board.
Right.
Don't believe your common sense. Don't, you know, common sense would dictate all the things we talked about. Autism is increasing. We shouldn't give sex change. We shouldn't sterilize 12-year-olds. But don't believe any of that. Don't believe that, you know, people who are homeless need help psychologically, need some way to treat the addiction. Obviously, there are more intelligent people like Schellenberger that have a plan for this, despite the fact that he didn't get into the governor's office, which is a shame because he would have done far better than what California is dealing with now. But it's this constant game,
yeah,
and a manipulation of the facts all the time. And this is where, if I could do one thing in my job, like it's teaching people how to defer back to their common sense. It's crazy.
Yeah, so common sense is not that common, right?
No.
It's also people are tired because they have a poor diet and they're not eating well. And so they don't have the time to be thinking about this stuff, and they don't have the mental energy to like research these things, and they're overwhelmed with bills and debt and, you know, and maybe like relationship problems, and, you know, there's so many problems that people have already. To get them to look at external issues that maybe don't affect them personally a day-to-day basis, it's very difficult to get people to focus on that. So then they vote with what they think is like their virtue.
Yeah.
You know, blue no matter who. Vote Democrat, right, no matter what. Like, okay, that's not helping you. And then when you abandon it and leave, you're called a traitor. You know, you're a traitor to the party. You must get that a lot.
Oh,
right?
My God. Well, I went through all of it. But then when you finally decide it doesn't matter anymore, you become immune. So I was, it's interesting. Back in the day when I, you know, my friend used to refer to me in this capacity, she'd say, you know, you're like the fat person's Jesus. This is the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Julian Michaels is, you know, doesn't judge, but then she's open arms and she's trying to help people. And then the very same person with the very same belief system and the very same strategies in dealing with the problem became the ultimate enemy,
yeah,
the ultimate fat shamer, the ultimate science denier.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you how the narrative shifts. It's tough to call me a transphobe because I fall under that acronym umbrella,
right,
despite the fact that gay is different, very different than trans. I've never really understood the acronym either.
It's a trap.
It completely.
Yeah.
But you can't say, like, go ahead. Like, I'm a homophobe? Like, come at me, bro. Like,
you're
it's a
gay.
Tough one, you know? Like, I'm married to a woman.
Yeah.
It's tough to, like, you can try. I haven't been hit with the racist card, although I'm waiting for it. I don't know, maybe because my kid is Haitian and she gives me a pass. I have no idea. But, you know, you get certain protections simply because you're a card-carrying member,
yeah,
of the club. But I got hit with everything outside of that, you know, transphobe, not ish, fat shamer and anti-science and ableist, mm-hmm, and privileged and all of that stuff.
Yeah, but all that stuff is losing its meaning. You know, the problem is you keep calling people, you call everyone a racist, like it doesn't mean anymore. You're crying wolf so many times that people don't listen anymore. Like a real racist is horrific. You see, you run into a real racist, like, oh my God, that's horrific. But you know, if you just call everyone a racist, if you call math is racist, like, okay, math's racist? Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are racist. I've seen that. Okay.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, exercise is racist.
Oh, I did see that. Alt-right. Yes.
Wonderful.
Alt-right, MSNBC.
Wonderful.
Alt-right, I liked that. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
I will tell you, though, I don't think that it is losing as much power as I had hoped. And I reference Elon Musk, and here's why. It's seemingly working. I know a lot of people that think he's an anti-Semite. I'm like, you sure about that?
Well, they think he's a Nazi. More than just an anti-Semite,
right. Okay.
Actual Nazi.
These are reasonable people.
Yeah, and here's the irony. He's on the spectrum. So this thing, where he didn't even realize what he's doing when he's going
heart
like,
gesture.
My heart goes out to you.
But Joe, what about the video, the montage of all the liberals, including AOC,
doing
engaging
it.
In the same yes. Sig Hail.
Tim Walsh, I love yes. you all. Love
yes.
You all. This is like it's like a thing that people have to stop doing.
But that's
you got to do it like this. You gotta have two hands, touch your heart, and then.
Open I'm not
it.
Doing it.
You know, when
I'm
I was getting
complying.
In trouble with CNN during the vaccine days, the COVID days, they would use a photograph of me from the UFC weigh-ins. Because when I go to the UFC weigh-ins, I say, "Welcome to the weigh-ins, everybody." So they had this photo of me from the side with my arm. That's the one they used all the time.
No, people
yeah.
buy that shit and they are still buying it, and that scares me. And in a argument on Piers Morgan, it raised my voice a little bit. I was like, well, I don't know. I don't think he's an anti-Semite. Number one, he's friends with the Jews. Number two, he hires Jews. And number three, he hasn't killed any Jews. And they
he
were
has
like,
a necklace around his neck that he's given to one of the mothers of the hostages. It says, bring them home.
Okay, I remember him going after October yeah. 7th. And talking about the videos that he'd seen, but the guy was like, oh, that's your benchmark? He doesn't kill Jews? And I was like, no, that's yours. You're the one comparing him to Hitler, who killed 6 million Jews. So if you're going to draw that comparison, 6 million. So shut the fuck up.
It's all a trick, because what they're really doing is going after him because he's trying to go after USAID. And so
I see
their
that.
Their slush fund.
But can yeah. I tell you how many reasonable people, and I
oh,
cannot.
I have friends that I have to argue about it with.
Exact same.
Yeah.
That's when I tell you that I don't know that it's actually losing its power.
It is.
You think?
It's just not losing its power with really fucking dumb people. And you're going to have a certain percentage of really fucking dumb people. And they're either going to have to catch up, or we're going to have to overwhelm them with a lot of logic.
That.
And that takes time. And it takes a lot of these kind of conversations. And they get out there and they get clipped. And maybe you and I said something here that will be taken out of context and used against you, which is always really fun. That's my favorite. And they just take like a snippet of it. See, told you. She's a
yes!
this. She's a that. And
I know.
It's this reductionist thing where they try to define you by a string of words.
And
forget about your whole life.
They did that to Candace Owens.
Yes.
Because, oh, she's this disgusting anti-Semite. So I listened to her. I listened to her answer all that stuff on her show. And then I listened to her debate it with Rabbi Shmuley. And I thought, okay, let's see what a bitch she is. And I listened to everything she said. And I checked it all and watched it in context. And then I actually sat with her, and I was like, all right, I'm going to open the door.
I like Candace a lot, but Candace says a lot of wild shit.
She does.
Not accurate. Like,
but do you
she thinks
think
dinosaurs
she hates
are
Jews.
Fake.
I hear you. I get it. I get it.
That is, like, self-inflicted. That's
I
a self-inflicted wound.
But do you think that she, I'm like, all right, you know, are you a Holocaust denier? No, I'm not a Holocaust denier. And then still to this day, she's a Holocaust denier.
Well, that's my friend Daryl Cooper, who was on my podcast, you know, because he said hyperbolically that Winston Churchill was one of the main villains of World War II because he started blockades and forced Hitler into action and starved the German people. Like, it's like what he said was really unfortunate, the way he said it, but he was trying to say that Winston Churchill did some things that if he hadn't done them, maybe World War II wouldn't have gone the way it went. But the problem is when you say that and it gets taken out of context, people say, oh, he's a Holocaust denier
yeah.
and a Nazi sympathizer.
Right.
But then you listen to his podcast. He's got this, like, I think it's like 30 hours called Fear and Loathing in New Jerusalem. And it's the most gut-wrenching tale of the persecution of Jews in Eastern Europe. Just the beginning of it. I tell everybody, just listen to the first like 40 minutes of it. It's so heartbreaking. Like, this is not the words of a homophobe, or excuse me, of an anti-Semite
right.
that would say those things.
I haven't.
But reductionist things that people love to do.
But even still, here would be my argument to that. Let's say he was. If you're inclined to believe that, let's say that was his argument, and that Hitler wasn't bad, and it was Churchill, then you're an asshole and an idiot.
Yeah.
Then there's no hope for you. This gatekeeping of information.
But he's neither an asshole or an idiot, and he's being called an asshole and an idiot by people who don't consume his work.
Of course. I'm saying worst really case scenario, because I see this a lot with the gatekeeping of information, and God forbid you don't fact check everybody on everything, which has been something that I've gotten a bit of. Like, well, you nodded your head and you said, I see your point. I'm like, well, sometimes I see their point and sometimes I don't know and I can't fact check everything. And I'll talk to somebody else who has a differing opinion, but people can think for themselves as well.
Yeah. Just a lot of bad faith actors out there. And there's a lot of people that do that. This taking people out of context and trying to use this reductionist perspective and label people with these pejoratives that are inescapable. Like, it's in the racist, homophobe, anti-Semite, all those are inescapable. And once you get hit with those, that's your fucking sticker on your forehead for the rest of your life. And that's what they're trying to do to you, because they're trying to silence you and because they want to win. And this is a real problem with human beings when it comes to ideas, is that, like, if I believe something and you believe something differently, I don't want to listen to you. I want to beat you, right? I want to overwhelm you with talk. I want to Piers Morgan you into submission. I want to yell at you, not Piers the human, but the show.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
You want to yell at them and you want to win. You want to dunk on them. And this is why I don't engage with people on social media. I just think it's the worst way to communicate. And when I see people doing it, I genuinely feel bad for them, because I think they're mentally ill. When people are dunking on people constantly on social media, I'm like, well, that's a sign of mental illness. Like, there's something wrong with you. You don't realize that yet? Like, this shit's been around for 20 years now, and you're still engaging in that kind of behavior on social media? It's stupid.
It gets clicks. That's what I think it is.
That's also part of the problem. I get enough attention.
Yeah, I get enough attention
so I don't need to, like, reach out and try to get more, which is like, but by the way, that's what you're supposed to do when you get a lot of attention. You're supposed to rise above, you know, with great power, great responsibility. You're supposed to try to be nicer, which I try. That's like one of my core tenets in life. Be as nice as possible. And here's a shocker. I find people are nice to me almost entirely. Like, very rarely are people not nice to me, because I'm nice to everybody. So if you're nice to everybody, guess what? People are nice to you. And even people I disagree with fundamentally.
But you're listening to them, though. That's exactly what you're trying to say. Like,
yeah.
One of the conversations that I've referred to a couple times is the one I had with Matt Walsh. There's no universe where I'm going to change Matt Walsh's mind about gay marriage. But at least I want to understand him. And I also am hoping that some people who are in the middle of this argument and could be influenced might go my way. And I cannot remember if this was a TED Talk or where this information or this story was put out in the world, but it was the story of a black man who ended up befriending a grand wizard of the Klan. And ended
Dale up. Davis.
Is that
He's a friend of ours. He's been on the podcast a couple times.
Oh my God, the story. Like,
Daryl's a musician.
Oh my God.
And he met.
And became the guy's, like, godfather, the guy's kids?
Not just one. No, he's got more than 100 of these KKK guys to give him their robes. Yeah, and convert and change them over.
That's
just by
what I
want. Just by love. Just with love.
That's what I'm hoping in those conversations. That's power.
Yeah, well, Daryl's a really amazing person, a shining example of what's possible. When you just show people, like, he's like, man, you're different than all the others. He's like, actually, I'm just a human. I just have more melanin in my skin, you know,
right.
And you are, unfortunately, you have been trapped by an ideology. You have othered people simply by their looks, you know, and you haven't learned this lesson that we were supposed to be taught by Dr. King in the 1960s, you know, judge a man by the content of their character.
It must have been your show, actually, where I heard it, but
Daryl's
changed
amazing. Yeah.
The way that I approach 99% of my conversations, because
right.
I thought, okay, if I listen with an intent to hear and an intent to understand, and I can expose people to the things they're uncomfortable with in a way where we find common ground, I may not change their mind, but at least you're, in some cases you hopefully can,
yeah.
And at least you're modeling.
But it takes so much time. You know, it's like Indiana Jones when the guy starts throwing the whip and he just pulls the gun out and just shoots him. Like, that's like, I just want to just shut the fuck up, you know? And that's what a lot of people like, especially today in this, like, everybody wants to take Ozempic. You want a quick fix. You don't want to work out for fucking 6 years to lose 50 pounds. No, I want to just lose 50 pounds in a month. You know, and this is the quick fix thing of today's society. And when you're offered this pill that makes you smarter instead of reading books, like, yeah, I'll take that pill. You know, like, this is the argument that I've said to people when they always talk about, you know, I don't have time for exercise. Like, I'm not interested in my body. Like, this is stupid. It's vain. It's just not. I'm like, listen. If I gave you a pill, just gave you a pill, and that pill made you fit and healthy and muscular, you wouldn't take that pill?
Improved your
self-confidence.
Why
would you not want a body that works way better?
Improved your mood.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you would.
Your sex life would get better, all of those things.
Of course you'd take it.
That's a defense mechanism, though. You know that.
Right.
It's a fear that they would be incapable of following through on what's required. So they defend against it. It's the same shit you see with people that are overweight and like, I don't care. Or they make fun of their weight and like they become the funny fat guy. It's a defense mechanism.
Oh, I have a lot of friends like that. A lot of comedians. It's like their entire act, like being fat.
I know.
A big part of it. Yeah.
There was a guy, I went to Kill Tony last night and there was a comedian that was up first and he was 412 pounds and the guys were doing what they obviously do. But there was a part of my heart that was splitting.
Of course.
Because I was like, deep down, he's hurting. Deep down, this fucking guy's hurting. Deep down, it's so funny.
I know, right? That's the problem.
I was dying inside for
and
him.
And also, if you're 420 pounds or whatever he is, like, boy, the road to becoming healthy is hundreds of pounds away. And that is so daunting. Especially when you have the pull of addiction.
Yes.
And
that's the big problem.
Yeah. And then you get eat intuitively.
Oh my God. Which is impossible, by the way.
Right.
Because the food is designed to override.
If I eat intuitively, I eat only pizza.
God, I have a French diet. Fries in there. I think
it's 100%. Yeah, pizza, fries, and ice cream.
Jesus.
And Coca-Cola would be my whole diet.
But the entire food system, all of the ultra-processed foods, is designed to override your body's signaling of satiety. It's fucking impossible.
Yeah.
And then you couple that with the psychological vulnerabilities, and it's a powder keg.
You sound like an ad for Ozempic.
I am. That's exactly what I am. Oh my God, I'm gonna get that tattoo, man. Afro-Zempic Dragon Believer. I got the sticker, by the way. It's on my suitcase. I like that. Afro-Zempic.
It's really kooky. It's weird. But the only way out is through conversations. The only way out is to educate people or enlighten people or expose people to other ideas. Like, you're not really going to educate them, but you'll expose them to other ideas. And I think over time, the good ideas will win. It's just, it's been so many years of bad ideas, and it's so indoctrinating, and it's so difficult. And then also, it's your identity. Your identity is this, you know, whatever it is, whether you're Matt Walsh or whether you're a 420-pound trans person, like, your identity is, like, embedded in whatever you think of yourself as being, and it's very difficult to take wisdom from someone that you think of as the enemy.
That's so true. And breaking that identity, in particular, when it works against someone.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that people can't believe in a reality they haven't experienced.
That's true.
And so one of the ways that I used to utilize fitness was to give them an experience that they didn't think they were capable of. So all of a sudden, you've got the funny fat guy who just ran that mile without stopping. Or who just did the push-up on the hands and the feet, or just did 10 pull-ups in a row, or even two. Yeah, but once they look at their achievement, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was capable of this. And then you shatter that prison of limiting beliefs and you open up an infinity of possibility.
You also have to find a tribe. You have to surround yourself with other people that are trying to prove themselves. So if other people around you are trying to improve themselves, then it will encourage you to be a part of that group and you all do it together.
Completely.
And then help each other if you fall off the wagon and pick each other up and like reinforce positive behavior.
You see all of that with, you know, back in the day, I used to get so caught up in the fights about diets and fat workouts. And as I've matured, or like to think that I have matured, I don't even engage in that shit anymore. It really doesn't matter what workout you're doing. If you're doing it with a qualified professional or if people are showing up for CrossFit because they love CrossFit and they love the community, great. If they're showing up for Pilates because they love the community and they're showing up for it, great. As long as they're showing up for something,
right,
and the person teaching them, like a great CrossFit coach, matters. Yeah, that's a big difference between you herniating three discs and getting into the best shape of your life. So I would simply say, look for a qualified expert.
Yeah, but that's a good point.
You know, I'm beyond the what's the best diet and what's the best. Who gives a fuck? As long as you're in a positive environment that's getting you to show up for it day after day after day,
right,
something's better than nothing.
And
it doesn't matter.
And you're focusing on improving.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that comes with community. For sure, you're absolutely
That's what
right.
people love about CrossFit is the whole community of people.
Absolutely.
You go there, you're all working out together. I used to love that about yoga class.
Yes.
You go to a bunch of people. I knew them all. Like, hey, what's up? You know, but you don't talk until after it's over. It's
right.
like one of those things. Like, they really discourage talking before. But, like, you're all sweating together. You're going through it together. There's no other way, you know? And then you get out the other end. You're like, wow, I wouldn't have done that by myself. I would have quit at, like, 40 minutes. But I did the whole 90 minutes, and now I feel better. And then the rest of the day is easy.
That's why I think community is such an integral part of treating addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have that supportive group to keep you accountable, to show up, to feel like you're a part of something, and we've seen it work for you and work against you.
Yeah.
It's
also an integral part for an evil army, unfortunately.
I know!
You have to believe that you have to kill these heretics.
Beginning, how do we tip things over to the right side?
You have to make
right
your side be
the
more attractive. You have to make your side kinder and more empathetic and also more admirable.
Yes,
yeah.
You're right. That's, the rewards have to be there, and admirable is one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to like wish you had those characteristics and go, why don't I? Oh, maybe I can. You know, and just also realize you're not who you used to be. Okay, if you were a fat alcoholic gambling addict, you don't have to stay that way forever. You don't have to. You're not that. You're a human being. You were trapped with behavior and ideas that were not self-serving. They're not good for people around you. You probably stole things to feed your addictions, and you feel you have terrible self-worth and terrible self-image. But that's not you. That's who you have been. You are who you are right now. So if you choose right now to be positive from here on out, and you're going to have some mistakes and fuck up along the way, but find a group. This is why Alcoholics Anonymous is so important.
Yeah.
You get around these people and you all agree. They're all like, and you have sponsors and you help each other. Like, this is the whole idea of community. We are not solitary individuals. We're just not. We are a collective organism experiencing itself in individual ways.
I agree with you. I do. I sometimes see evil winning out more often than not.
Well, because that's what's in the news, and that's also what's in your algorithm, you know? And that's why you have to stay off social media. Yeah. That's I feel so much better. I've been off social media, like, almost entirely for, like, really weaned off about 2 weeks ago. I really followed my wife's footsteps because, like, she just got off. And she's like, I feel so much better. I'm like, damn, that's crazy. And so I'm like, let me try it. And so I tried it for a day. I was like, why do I feel so much better after this day? And then I tried a couple days. And then I'm like, oh, it's real. Like, there's, you know, Sugar Sean O'Malley, UFC champion, he goes, I get a low-level anxiety when I'm scrolling through social media. I'm like, right, what is that? Like, what is that? But that shit's real. It's also, you realize, like, you're just distracting yourself with this stupidity.
That's
but when
for
you don't
freaking sure.
But when you don't do
yes.
that, your mind feels better. It really does feel better. So I will occasionally, like, if I'm on the toilet, I'll, like, scroll through Twitter, find out what is everybody mad at, and then I'll put it away, you know? And then sometimes I'll go days without looking at it at all. And then sometimes, like, hey, like, I got a text the other day, like, hey, man, are you okay? I'm like, well, what? And they're like, oh, people are mad at you on Twitter. I'm like, okay. That's not the real world, bro. I don't even know what they're mad at.
No.
Like, no, don't reach. Like, a friend of mine sent me something that people were, I go, don't send me that shit. I'm not looking at it. I don't care.
Aren't you immune to that by now, though? You have been forged in fire. For fuck's sake. What are they going to say to you at this point that you're even going to care
about?
Well,
the thing is, it's not me. It's them. They think that I'm upset at this thing because they would be upset at this thing because they don't get attacked. Right. So, like, my sister used to send me things like that. I'm like, don't send me that shit. Yeah, I don't care. Like, you know.
I know my wife used to do that for a little while because she would worry and want me to kind of like temper my behavior.
Right.
My business partner would do the same thing. Like, oh, I really don't know because you should stay in the pocket here on the fitness stuff. But I found that the more I would lean into that, it didn't matter how many attacks would come my way because you would resonate with the people that got it. And that ended up working better for me personally and professionally. But you're right. It is their concern of how they would feel if people called them those things or came for them with the pitchforks and the torches.
And by the way, the worst thing you could do is fight back, which is really crazy. The worst thing you could do is like interact with people
of
that are attacking
course.
You, which is really kind of, but that's everyone's instinct. Everyone's instinct is to go, well, I'll tell you what I think now.
You get caught up in it.
Yeah, you get caught up in it.
It's ridiculous. The only time I find myself doing that these days, and I'm going to stop it, is when my son will challenge me on something. And then, okay, my mother, I was like, we're debating something. She's like, honey, you're litigating this with a 13-year-old. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I you know why? Because I still care what my kids think about me.
Sure.
Instead of, you know, but the rest of the world, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck.
Well, you do, but also you can't control what people think.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The only thing you could do is be undeniable.
That's so well said.
Yeah.
That is so well said.
That's all you have. And so what happens with haters is they challenge you to become more undeniable. And so that's good. That's what their job is.
They make you steel man your arguments.
All the losers of the world, they challenge you to become a bigger winner.
They really do.
Yeah.
I've learned how, especially in the health space, when I would be active in a conversation about fitness or nutrition or what have you, you learn how to bulletproof yourself in that conversation.
Right, because people
you leave
will
an opening.
Fight so hard
oh, man.
To keep their bad habits.
God, it is insane.
Yeah.
And there's also so much infighting in every industry, which bums me out. And that's when I just was like, what am I
doing?
Well,
that's an attention thing, right? They're upset that you're getting the attention that they think they deserve. Like, she doesn't even know what the fuck she's talking about. Like, blah, blah, blah.
But you know
what? You see a lot of that in the health space.
You do, and I hate it. And it's super disappointing because we can share ideas and we can, as you said, admit when we're wrong and learn and grow and what have you. But the real enemy is not another friggin' doctor or another PhD with a different opinion.
Right.
You know, we've seen who the real enemy is. Yeah. And it's big pharma when it's got bad intentions or big food with bad intentions or big ag. It's not going to be like the guy who has a different opinion on cholesterol. For fuck's sake.
It's not even that. It's just that that guy with a different opinion on cholesterol is getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And then these people are comparing them. They're comparing themselves to that person. Why don't I get this
completely.
Attention? And the way to get the attention is to dunk on that person, to say awful things.
Yeah.
But then people dunk on you. And then now your life is conflict. Okay. Good job.
when they do, I like to sit down and see if there's truth there, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, I've not been immune to some of Lane Norton's assaults. And you know what? We sat down and I was like, listen, Lane, the things you're going after me on are not from me. It's from this PhD, that PhD, this PhD, and the American Medical Association. And had him on my podcast. And by the time we were done, he won me over. I was like, I believe you. I think you're right. I'm changing my position on this. You know, but sometimes you're right. It's because someone is getting attention or there's envy there. And I would simply say you can intuit when a criticism might be legitimate. And when you're seeing it over and over and over again, and it's a similar thing, there's something to look at there. But outside of that, when you know it's bullshit. Then,
there's also the problem with bots.
Oh,
so
yeah. Oh, my God.
Vast majority of Twitter might be bots.
Yeah.
You know, an FBI analyst that used to, he used to analyze big data sets. He said he looked at Twitter and he said it might be about 80% bots.
Kara Swisher said that to me.
Yeah.
I was blown away.
You know how crazy that is?
And she would know. And she was showing me stuff, these bot farms and shit all along the wall. It's,
yep.
And then you're just engaging with.
And they shape narratives. And
it's crazy.
Rogue states and different people use it, and I'm sure like there's publicity firms that use it. I'm sure. I mean, I don't know.
I don't either, but without question.
You could use it with AI. You know, you could easily have one computer that would run many, many accounts, and you could program it to have variations on a theme. But you see it sometimes when, like, there's a lot of social media influencers that get co-opted, and one of the things that you see is a very similar message, you know, and they use very similar phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sharp as a tack was one of them. And you saw that over and over again with Biden, like sharp as a tack,
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So they were getting influenced, and yes, they were getting paid.
Yes. You know who, did you ever see that? I'm sure, of course you would have. But I remember when I was talking to Senator Johnson, and he was exposing me to the Trusted News Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the whole, the newscasters that have the exact same script and say the exact same thing.
It's Orwellian.
And but in broad daylight.
Yep.
There's guys, like, we have clips of all of you
saying the exact same thing.
It's so clear. It's a narrative. And when he told me, he was, God, this blew my mind. He went pre-COVID he was talking about this event at the Milken Institute where Fauci and oh my God, I'm going to screw this up, but I think it's this guy, Rick Bright, forgive me because this may be wrong, but this group of people, definitely Fauci, were talking about what it would take to get a global vaccine program. Fauci says probably going to take a pandemic, and this is like 5 months before COVID. Not that, you know, just to put my tin hat on and roll myself in tin foil and jump all the way down the rabbit hole. But then Avril Haines said, well, what are we going to do about misinformation at this event that she'd put on shortly after that? And he said that's where they came up with the Trusted News Initiative, right in time.
Well, not only that, for COVID. They came up with a new term, and that term is malinformation.
Ah.
Do you know what malinformation is? Malinformation is true information that might do harm.
Did not know this.
So there's misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation.
I have not heard that.
Yeah. Malinformation was something they were trying to promote during the Biden administration as being dangerous. And it's essentially the truth.
I knew we've got to reconsider the First Amendment.
Yeah.
I've seen all those clips. That is some scary shit. It's like Senator Kerry, Bill Gates, Hillary Clinton. And do we criminalize people who are promoting this misinformation? But I did not hear malinformation.
Did you ever see the CEO of NPR doing a TED Talk saying that sometimes the truth gets in the way of getting things done?
Oh, God, no. But I've heard them all say that. And said it on... Oh, my God.
Well, it's an infantilization of the public because they're too stupid to handle the truth. They're dumber than you. You're the purveyor of information, and you need to give them the information that gets things done. And sometimes you have to lie to them. Like, vaccines are safe and effective.
Oh, my God. What did you post? I think it was the cover of The New Yorker that said something about doing away with the First Amendment.
Yeah.
And
wonderful idea.
like, wait, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, the real
it's not like a number 14, by the way, or number 5 is a number 1.
Yeah.
The First Amendment. It's
in the way. It's in the way.
That, to me, when you're having this debate about Kamala versus Trump, I'm like, how do you guys have this selective outrage about what's flipping your shit? Oh, a due process for Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who's, you know, probably beats his wife and is a suspect. I get it.
He's got MS-13 tattooed on his knuckles.
Yeah. I mean, come on. And there was a deportation order. Yeah. Just say it. Like, so you
see the photographs that his wife puts out where she covers his knuckles in every picture?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hilarious.
I mean.
So I was saying, oh, my God, they deported a Maryland man and a father, because that's what I was reading in the news.
Same.
And then you get into it and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, hold on. And then they released the dash cam footage, the police footage of when they arrested him. Not dash cam, you know, whatever the cops are wearing.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I thought like, the exact same thing.
It's crazy. But it's just like you can't just go on narratives, because these narratives are just designed to make the Trump administration look like monsters.
I was giving an interview to this woman from the New York Times, and she's like, "But don't you see this?" And I was like, "I do see it, and I don't understand it, and I wish it would be different." But you know, but then you get into the lesser evils. I wrote her back, and I was like, "I don't agree with my previous position, based on the current information available to me now."
Yeah, it seems like he was a gang member. But then there was that gay hairdresser that like seems like he just got roped up.
I know, and what I have learned so far, because I've really been trying to get to the bottom of that one, because I don't understand why the left isn't leaning on that one.
Right.
The other guy beats his wife, suspected trafficker. Like, you want to be outraged? Like, this guy is a gay hairdresser. I guess he committed, I was listening to Tim Pool talk about this, immigration fraud. So, listen, that guy doesn't belong in
an El Salvador prison.
I agree with you completely.
Also, he's not even from El Salvador, which is really crazy.
Now, okay, hold on. Here would be the argument there. I think, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that if somebody can be deported, but they are withheld because of asylum, correct me if I'm wrong here, because they worry going back to their home country is dangerous or deadly, like Kilmer Abrego Garcia.
Right.
Because he's not a gang member, but he's afraid of being killed by other gangs that aren't MS-13. You caught that one, right?
Oh, boy.
So it's like, I can't go home because the other gangs will kill me. But I'm not a gang member. Nevertheless, there's a deportation order on him, so I believe that they can just send him to a third country, and that's not illegal. That's something I heard.
Okay, so but just
no, the kid shouldn't go to it. You're right.
Immigration
should not go to a
fraud
freaking,
when you're a gay hairdresser.
Right.
You don't throw him in a fucking concentration
You could
camp.
Not be more right about that. But tell me then, why is the left not hanging there? Freaking, why
know.
Is he not the poster child? That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's his knuckles.
Yeah.
Look, people don't agree that that's what that means.
Oh, dude, I've talked to a gang expert.
Two separate courts agreed.
I talked to a guy who's a gang expert who explained it to me. He's like, yeah, this is how it works.
There's also an informant who confirmed.
Well, there's different versions of MS-13, but that's what it means. Like marijuana, smiley face, Jesus, and then the skull.
I'm just saying when I've looked online.
How is this the last poster child?
Okay, you can look online, but I talked to a gang expert that told me that it was explaining to me. And there's a bunch of different versions of gang tattoos.
There's two courts that determined he was an MS-13 gang member. The cops had an informant that was an extremely reliable source that said he is MS-13. The guy, the wife, was like, he beats me, and then withdrew, I guess, but had filed a report.
And she had a protection order in
2021. Yes, the cops pulled the guy over with eight guys in the car going like from Texas to Maryland, I think, or from Maryland to Texas. No luggage, no tools, and suspected him of trafficking. I mean, and again, I will simply say, if you didn't apply for asylum.
Why are they hanging their hat on this one and not the gay hairdresser?
I'm asking you that.
What is the latest on your sacrificial lamb?
Because
I heard Glenn Greenwald talk about the gay hairdresser, and that one seems the most compelling.
I agree completely.
But there's no logic in this world anymore.
It's all kooky.
Like, whatever gets traction, you know?
But
maybe it's because he's got kids. Oh, he's a father, a Maryland father. You know, like, that's what it is. Like, I keep saying, wrongly deported Maryland father. Like, why? Tell me why. What's wrong about it?
He had a deportation order, 100%, and then said, "I am worried that the other gangs will kill me," and so that's when they withheld the deportation order.
Ooh, yeah.
But he can be deported to another country legally. That's the part that, if he's not a gang member, why is he worried about being killed by other gangs? I mean, just
this is a common sense piece. The whole thing's.
I'd
kooky.
Hang my hat on the gay hairdresser guy.
It's kooky.
I agree with you.
Like,
I don't know.
Like, imagine, you know, inheriting this problem. Like, you've had open borders for 4 years, and they've let thousands and thousands of potential criminals in here, if not millions. They've let millions of people. Who knows how many of these people are suspected terrorists? It's not just one. It's not zero. Okay, so what's the number? I don't know. How many of them are gang members? What, is it zero? No, it's not zero. So they let in gang members. Okay. How many of them are in the
cartel?
Well, it's not zero. Okay, well, what the fuck do you do? What do you do if you want to clean up this mess that has been en masse for 4 years?
Just exactly.
Flooded. Open borders. Not just open borders, but like busing them in, flying them in, giving them debit cards. giving them phones.
Oh my God, interest-free loans in California.
Yeah.
Loopholes that Gavin Newsom has created to give them health care.
Billions of dollars
in
health care.
My friggin' 35-year-old brother can't get a home loan and can't get health care, but his tax dollar. Like, this
he needs to change his name in Mexico and walk across the border.
I told him a couple of times. I was like, Greg, you know, burn the passport, babe. This will work. You know, he's half Latin. He's my half brother. He could get away with it. He looks the part. It is, it is bananas. And
but it's all a political ploy. And the idea that they're not doing it to get votes is crazy because that's what they're doing. There's a reason why the vast majority of them get moved to swing states. Like, they're doing it on purpose.
Okay.
And Elon has been talking about this, and it's one of the other reasons why they call him a Nazi.
I've had this conversation with intelligent people, and they're like, well, there's no evidence that they're voting. Okay. But here, if we were to game this all the way out, if I was to hit Elon's points that I believe I understand, first of all, I think they can vote in some states in local elections.
Yes.
And Karen Bass becomes Gavin Newsom, becomes, God forbid, the president of the United States. Uh-huh. So there's a reason we've got this whole grassroots thing going on, I would imagine. And then I'm told that when they sign up for benefits, they potentially can sign them up to reach out to them to vote. That could be conspiracy theory, though. Very much so. I'm talking out of my ass. I don't know.
Right, but it's not a conspiracy that they're giving them social security numbers.
Did not know that.
Yeah, because a woman who was explaining when she was working for the Social Security office what they would have her do. So they would have them get permanent disability. And the way they get permanent disability is you just have to say you have a back problem. So if you have a back problem, then you have permanent disability. And if you get permanent disability, then they start labeling them as a client.
Oh.
If you label them as a client, then they get money forever. And so if then you have people like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and all these people saying we need to give these people a road to citizenship. Okay, well, then you potentially have millions and millions of people. Now, if the Democrats are in charge, they can change the rules and make it so that these people have a road to citizenship. Then they can vote on elections. So now you've imported millions of people that are going to vote for sure for the people who gave them the money, not for the people who hired Tom Holman to kick everybody out.
Here's another question. Why are you not requiring identification to vote?
Because it's racist.
Can you imagine?
Are you not requiring it, in California, you're not allowed to show it. It is illegal to show your identification when you vote.
That's just...
There's only one reason why you would do that. It's because you want fraud.
What would be exactly when I ask people who are on the other side, I'm like, game this out for me. Steel man this argument. What is the logic?
You see Kathy Hochul's logic about that?
No.
A lot of these black kids, they don't even know what a computer
is. Oh, I have seen that. Oh, my God. And I saw the black guy making fun of her.
Yes.
They're just running around the computer.
Oh, like, what is this?
Oh, my God. Which is the most racist
the
thing
most
that you could
racist
possibly
thing.
Say.
By the way, every fucking kid has a computer. They all have phones.
Did you see that video? I think it came out of PragerU, where they were saying, like, well, you know, black people don't. They don't have access to ID and they can't figure out same thing. It's the most
so racist.
Disgustingly
it's crazy.
Racist thing.
You tell me that
you can say.
What about poor white people that live in West Virginia?
It's so gross.
Dirt poor. You know,
staggeringly gross.
It's crazy.
How about this one? I've also been told that the more people you have in a census, it doesn't matter if they're legal citizens.
Right.
You get more representation.
Yeah, you get more seats.
Well, then effectively, you can make a president a lame duck if you've got.
Right. Exactly. And that's why California's losing seats. Because people are escaping.
Escaping
is that
is
what it is.
Word.
It's escaping.
I go on record as saying I am pro-legal immigration.
Well, I'm the grandchild of immigrants. My whole family came from Italy and Ireland.
Unless you're a Native American. And you know, when you appreciate the ways in which legal immigration enriches a community, stimulates the economy, and you can control the flow. And as Gad Saad likes to explain, you know, they support their host community when they're brought in legally.
Yeah.
But when it's illegal, it overwhelms the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You bring in criminals. You don't know who's here.
Suicidal empathy.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
He's such a genius. He's an app. Thanks to you. I know of him.
Gad's the best.
Many years now. And I mean, he's an absolute genius.
Yeah.
He articulates it like no one else.
And he's, you know, seeing the rise of anti-Semitism in Montreal right now and at a staggering rate.
You know, I have to admit that
he's a guy escaped Lemadon for the same reasons.
I do tend to lean Dave Smith, after the show you did the other day, I reached out to him and I was like, all right, I got to tell you, I've always leaned more pro-Israel, and you opened my mind to a few things, and I...
Don't become a monster. Fight monsters.
An anti-Semite.
That's what it is. That's the thing. You know, it's like the horrors that you're seeing in Gaza. It's like, okay, you're fighting Hamas. Hamas are monsters. That's right. Yeah.
But like, you didn't let aid into the country.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
They killed aid workers.
Yeah.
It gets scary.
That's when
it gets really scary when you know you believe that someone's helping the enemy, so they become the enemy.
And it's not that you don't like Jews. I'll preface by saying my grandmother ran from the friggin' Nazis, and according to my 23andMe, 30-something% Jewish. However, I don't necessarily like Netanyahu, and I don't agree with a lot of the ways he's handled it. But it doesn't mean I don't understand what happened. I'm not appalled. I'm not disgusted. I personally think that kid Mahmoud Khalil should get the fuck out of here. Personally, I'm sorry. Like I could get into that one too. Like I see all of that, and I lean more towards the Israel.
Well, I completely understand how they could look at things the way they are. They're surrounded.
Yes.
They're surrounded by Arab states.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, if you have been attacked relentlessly since the beginning of, you know, whatever, 1948.
If it's in the charter, kill all Jews. I mean, that's not good. I don't know, you know.
But then you see, like, trans people from Palestine, like, hey. Yeah. hey. Do you fucking know what they would do to you? Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't been there, but yeah.
It's complicated, right? The world is a very complicated thing.
It's a nuanced conversation as well. I got to tell you, I was riveted by that debate. And both of them made excellent points. I learned a ton and changed my mind on some things. Like, I friggin' loved it. I thought they both, I'm sorry, at the end of the day, I thought they both made great points.
Mm-hmm.
I really did.
Yeah, for sure. I just wish that Douglas didn't misrepresent certain people.
I understand
like,
that.
Like Daryl.
Like the Daryl gentleman.
Yeah, the Daryl thing's crazy.
I actually never saw that show with him, so I wasn't able to fully comprehend the accusations. And simply thought, like, you can't gatekeep information, and people are, if somebody's going to believe that, if this was in fact the truth, right, and he was this guy that was saying Hitler was innocent, and or not innocent, but the lesser evil with regard to Churchill versus Hitler.
He definitely wasn't saying that. But what he was really saying, that apparently historians also agree with, it, that Hitler kind of hid his anti-Semitism early on. And that early on during his rise, he would keep it confined, like the really rampant anti-Semitism, he'd keep it confined to these like smaller meetings.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like...
He's Jewish, isn't he?
He
was a Jew, wasn't he?
I think
Hitler was a Jew.
What?
Jamie, will you check that?
Hitler was a Jew.
Hold on, I think so. I think he had some Jewish blood. Check it real quick, will ya? I remember hearing
that sounds crazy.
I remember hearing something.
Well, it's
like
also
this.
Like you believe in the alien Aryan race with blonde hair, blue eye. Hey, bro, that's not you.
That's not it. Hold on, I feel like there was some. Hold on. Oh, is it bullshit?
No, he was not Jewish.
Oh,
while
okay.
Rumors and conspiracy theories have circulated suggesting a Jewish grandfather, a Jewish ancestry, these claims are not supported by any historical evidence and are widely dismissed by historians.
Oh, Jesus. All right, shit the bet on that one.
It's really fascinating because he is one of the worst figures in history. Like, everybody other than really complete psychopaths agree with that.
Right,
one
that's what I'm saying.
One of the worst figures in human history.
If you can't disseminate that bit of information, because let's say, again, hypothetically, this gentleman, Daryl, was trying to make that point, then you're an idiot. If you can't determine, there are skinheads and KKK that are going to tell you the same thing. If you can't determine that that person's fucked up, you're an idiot.
That's not really the argument, though. It's like no one's really saying that.
No, I know. I'm suggesting that if the worst case scenario was that. But I appreciate what you're saying. That wasn't his point. And, you know, I have not done any homework on it.
He tries to look at things from everybody's view. He tries, like, imagine you're this person. Imagine you're a German citizen. And you've just gotten through World War I, and the whole world hates you. Like, imagine this. And then The drug thing is a big part of World War II. It's a giant part of it. Like, the fucking whole army was on meth. That is so crazy. That is so fucking crazy. Really, you should read Blitzed. It's really fascinating because they had like a like a over the counter meth that you could buy. What was it called?
Candy thing.
What is it called? Pervitin.
Yes, yeah. I remember seeing that on
your
show.
It's nuts.
And it was like a little candy tin.
Yeah, they were all eating meth. Super productive.
That's right.
That's why they have such great engineers. They're like, they're fucking dialed in. You know?
This is true. Okay. God damn. That's bright. I have a lot of dark spots here.
There's a lot of darkness in human history. A lot of it. A lot of evil. A lot of horrible consequences and a lot of lessons that we really learn but then unlearn. And that's what people are terrified of with this, like, Hitler apologist perspective. Like, don't unlearn this one huge fucking lesson that, you know, look, a guy like Hitler can exist. They can rise to power and become monsters and destroy countless lives. Like, it's impossible to really quantify the amount of damage that guy did. Don't unlearn that. And I get that. But don't also label someone as someone who didn't learn that when they're talking about it openly, discussing. Right. I mean, Daryl talks about what a fucking psychotic, drug-addled monster Hitler was all the time. Like, it's a part of his stuff. But you would have to actually consume his work. And Douglas admittedly never listened to him.
That's
he was just taking this narrative, this like, very reductionist narrative, that's very incorrect, mm-hmm. and just saying it over and over again and saying it on Bill Maher to applause breaks. But it's not what he's saying. It's stupid.
That. I did see that. I was kind of disappointed.
It's okay.
By it.
You know, but
I
you
was
don't.
Like, oh, no.
It's not, you know, it's not correct.
I hear you. Do you find that you fall victim to that sometimes? I see myself do it on occasion where you hear a narrative.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't dig deeper on it. And I've been guilty of it a couple of times.
I apologized to Bobby Kennedy when he came here because I said, yes. I believed everything about you before I read your book. I thought you were this kook who doesn't believe in vaccines and he's an anti-science guy and a conspiracy theorist. And then I read The Real Anthony Fauci. I was like, oh.
That's bananas.
That book's fucking nuts.
It is.
And by the way,
crazy.
Again, said it before, say it again. He would be sued if it wasn't true. And it is true.
Yep.
And what he did during the, just what he did during the AIDS crisis. And I know that they gave him a blanket pardon from everything from 2014. Weird they choose that date. Weird they choose that date when Obama had decided to get rid of gain of function research. And this motherfucker was like outsourcing it.
Yep, he was.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? We're still not having that conversation.
No.
Not in any meaningful way.
Well, at least it's in the White House now. That page is very comprehensive. But it's all right. Go to that page again because it's kind of hilarious.
Is it really?
Because it Trump's in the middle of it, like walking, like he's getting shit done.
Oh, like,
I've not seen it. It's like that might be how they tricked him into putting this page out there.
Well, he lifted the moratorium on it. That's the irony, I think, didn't he? Obama put a moratorium on it, and I think Trump lifted the friggin' moratorium.
I think it happened.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, look at this. Look at
Stop! This is awesome.
Like, I'm here to take care of business. I got a serious look on my face. And why are they, like, the true origins of COVID-19? Like, COVID signed it.
Oh,
like,
my
what is that?
God.
Why is it a signature?
You know what? Callie posted this, and he's like, can any scientist tell me what on this page isn't true? And I kind of thought this was a joke. I thought it was like...
No, scroll
oh,
like, so
my
the whole
God.
Thing. It is explaining the whole thing. The virus possesses, scroll up. Virus possesses biological characteristics that is not found in nature. In, you know,
wow.
Italics. Data shows that all COVID-19 cases stem from a single, in italics, single introduction into humans. This runs contrary to previous pandemics where there were multiple spillover events. Wuhan is home to China's foremost SARS research lab, which has a history of conducting gain-of-function research, gene-altering and organism supercharging at inadequate biosafety levels. And this is where Fauci, you know, they could get him on perjury because he was, you know, when he was being questioned, when he said famously to Rand Paul,
yes,
you do not know what you are talking about.
Yep.
Yeah. Look, there's a photo of him. With his hand with his fucking...
You've read the email where his team obviously is like, yo, listen, this is highly
clearly
suspect.
Gain of function research.
Yeah.
And then after he communicated with them, they all changed their
opinion.
Yeah,
for the sake of science and global harmony, let's not, you know, pursue this path. And then the Nature study came out. And that's...
Yeah, so you can download the House Oversight.
Crazy. That looks like a report my daughter would put together, by the way, for high school.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
But what's even more amazing is that each and every one of those points is exactly what Brett Weinstein laid out on your show in March of 2020.
Yeah.
And I remember...
And he was labeled a grandma killer.
I pulled the freaking car over and started Googling shit on the side of Pacific Coast Highway.
Yeah.
And that was my Neo moment in the Matrix. I that was it. I was forever gone. took the red pill.
I'm glad you took it.
And it was over, man.
I'm glad you're on the right side.
Thank you,
things.
Sir. Thank you, sir.
But thanks for being here. I really enjoyed talking to you too. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
Keep fighting the good fight.
I will. All you right. too.
Thank you. All right. Bye, everybody.